Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 11th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Access code 449-389. You can also find that at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on the Monday call, or weekly call, I think it says, on the left-hand side, top left-hand side. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side. Tonight's scripture reading is going to be Matthew chapter 28. It's the last chapter, verses 1 through 20. So we'll read all 20 verses tonight. And so it's the last chapter of Matthew. Matthew chapter 28. In the end of the Sabbath, as it began to dawn towards the first of the Sabbaths, came Mary Magdalene and the other Mary to see the sepulchre. And by the way, that particular verse is the verse where God has changed the seventh-day Sabbath to a first-day Sabbath. So let me read it again, because it's the Old Testament Sabbaths. Now it's the New Testament Sabbaths, and that's what God is talking about here. Anyway, in the end of the Sabbaths, as it began to dawn towards the first of the Sabbaths, came Mary Magdalene and the other Mary to see the sepulchre. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat upon it. His countenance was like lightning, and his raiment white as snow. And for fear of him, the keepers did shake and become as dead men. And the angel answered and said unto the woman, Fear not ye, for I know that ye seek Jesus, which was crucified. He is not here, he is risen. As he said, come see the place where the Lord, lay. And go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead. And behold, he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him. Lo, I have told you. And they departed quickly from the sepulchre with fear and great joy, and did run to bring his disciples word. And as they went to tell his disciples, behold, Jesus met them, saying, All hail. And they came and held him by the feet and worshipped him. And then Jesus said unto them, Be not afraid, go tell my brethren that they go into Galilee, and there shall they see me. Now, when they were going, behold, some of the watch came into the city and showed unto the chief priest all the things that were done. And when they were assembled with the elders and had taken counsel, they gave large money unto the soldiers, saying, Say ye, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we slept. And if this come to the governor's ear, we will persuade him and secure you. So they took the money and did as they were taught. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day. Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee, into a mountain where Jesus had appointed them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Amen. Okay, that's the end of the Gospel of Matthew, and next week we'll pick up maybe one of the other Gospels or the Epistle or something, but we'll see where we go. All right, let's see. I'm going to be on, Gerard and I both are going to be on, You Are Free TV tomorrow. It's going to be recorded tomorrow, and when they post it, they post it up on YouTube. When they post it, we'll post it up on our website, and Jan will send a message out, or I'll send a message out to let you know that it's up there. But I know last time when we did, I think we did it on a Tuesday, and I think they had it up by a Friday, if I recall. They were pretty quick in getting it up. We're also going to be on another TV program, Liberty Beacon. I got to get all of those people. They've been wanting me to come back on, and so Gerard and I will probably go back on that too. So that's Liberty Beacon TV. Okay, before we go into anything, Jan, are there any announcements?
just questions, basically. I got a bunch of questions.
Well, let's do the questions first, and then we're going to go read 2 pages or 3-page paper that we wrote, and then we'll move into our regular live program. But go ahead.
Okay, first question. Does National Liberty Alliance plan on addressing and pursuing the issue of smart meters and their forced acceptance for utility customers, especially those who are aware of their hazards and refuse their deployment on their homes and properties?
Well, we are partnershipping with another group. We haven't really connected. We did make a couple of connections with them, but we've been so busy, and I guess they have been busy too. We wanted to try to finalize a plan so that people could utilize those plans and do notice and demands onto the electric companies and have them remove the meters. We'll see how that goes. I don't know what kind of success they've been having, but we'll see how that goes. There is a process to take it to court, too, but look at these courts are so corrupt, and I think everybody here knows that. But that doesn't mean we can't use them and build cases as evidence for the future. And for the future, I say, for instance, we have this one case going through here in New York, which is the Second Amendment case. For those of us, the members in New York, have gotten together on that case. And we're going to read a couple pages of a paper that we just recently sent in. As a matter of fact, we mailed it on Friday. So they got it today, and we'll talk about that shortly. But anyway, if they throw us out, which is they're dead determined to do so. I mean, it's so obvious. It's sickening. I mean, all of this becomes, again, more proof. It becomes evidence against these people. We've got a lot of evidence against the judiciary. We can prove easily that this judiciary, without any doubt, just this case alone, we could prove that by their actions, their words, their deeds, their papers, everything, that they have totally left the law of the land. They do not acknowledge the law of the land whatsoever. They do not acknowledge the Constitution whatsoever. They do not acknowledge the Bill of Rights whatsoever. They couldn't care less about the Declaration of Independence. These people are tyrants. They don't care about anything. And I'm sure they're making money hand over fist. All these people seem to be doing so. And I know a lot of these federal judges are making money when they do an IRS case. And they don't even hide that. They get a special bonus if the case comes through guilty with a guilty verdict. They get a bonus. I heard it's up to $30,000 plus just for that one case as a bonus. So if that's not justice, I don't know. Obviously, it's not justice. So anyway, we're fighting in the courts. Their days are numbered. They may or may not know it yet, but I hear some big things are coming down soon. We've been hearing about these things for a while, but I'm hearing that it's coming down real soon, that a lot of people are going to be arrested, and the trials will eventually, however Trump has planned to run this thing, things are going to happen on that level. Once the deep state is totally exposed and these people are tried and removed from their positions and we get back our federal agencies back, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, and so on, all those agencies have been robbed and controlled by the deep state. That is the deep state. And they pay no heed to the people that we elect. They pay no heed to Congress. They pay no heed to the President of the United States. They pay no heed to any judge, and none of them go against them anyway. Congress has been beat up pretty bad by them. They got a lot of dirt on a lot of congressmen and senators, so they don't dare to do anything against them. But Trump is a free agent. He's taken no money from anyone, and he owes nothing to anyone, and he's hell-bent, in my opinion, to do something to save this nation. And I do believe he's going to succeed. It appears that he is succeeding. He does have the military on his side. he does have a lot of the FBI and a lot of CIA people also on a lower level. It's the higher ranking people that he's fighting against. And so, look, it's only a matter of time. These people are going down. And if these judges are that dumb that they don't see it and they don't take the chance to be able to jump ship from them and start giving us justice, and we come with with an olive branch, but they're not taking it. They are hell-bent on their attitude and the way that they are going in the courts, and they have no intention on giving us justice, common law, the law of the land, or any of our unalienable rights. The courts are totally civil courts. They call them civil courts, the rules of civil procedure, and they don't deny that fact. If you read our paperwork, we went straight out at them and said, hey, this is what we the Constitution says, this is what we want, and they denied us. They have denied us a common law court. They've denied us a court of justice. They've denied us a lot of things, and we got another paper we're going to be writing. Hopefully, maybe the next day or two, we'll get it out. You know, it shouldn't take too long to write this particular paper, but we're going to write another paper, get it into the court. We're going to read the paper that we filed on Friday that we were not supposed to send in, according to them, but we'll see. We'll show you that what we have here and why we did file. So justice is hard to find. And anybody who tries to fight these people, if you got a case and if it's well written and it's clear and you've made your jurisdiction clear and they deny your jurisdiction, then maybe we could take your case and use that as evidence. But it has to be clearly written. People have to be educated on how to write a case and how to control and maintain their jurisdiction. And you can learn that by reading our case, okay? It'll click on you. If you read the papers, it'll click because it's just a matter of time. Read through it a couple of times, and it'll click. So anybody who really wants to write a good case and make sure they hold their jurisdiction and hold these people to the feet to the fire and preserve their situation so that they can use that we could use it as evidence, we'll see what we can do with that. I guess that's it. You know,
I'd like to say something hard.
Yeah, let me just finish, though. It's going to be very hard to win a case. If you do the paperwork through the electric company, you might be able to get success without even having to go to court. But if you have to go to court, it may be very hard to get through because, remember, the judges are going to be status quo on this thing. And these electric companies are big business to them. But go ahead, John.
Yeah, that's kind of the tack I was going to take. Somebody came on and said that the electric company forces you to take the meter, and then actually, you know, there's actually like prosecution there, threat of that, which they absolutely cannot do. And Tal and Josh really have a handle on what it is. Look, you have an existing contract on your meter, whether you know it or not, whether you signed anything or not. The fact that you've been paying the bill. So under contract law, if they want to change the contract, what they do is they stick a little piece of paper in there and they say, we have this new meter and blah, blah, blah. Well, if you don't protest, then that means you acquiesce. That means you accept the contract. So what I'm going to tell people is that you need to follow their protest plan as far as noticing them and saying, no, I don't want this. They cannot require you to take that thing because they're trying to change the contract in the middle of the stream. And there is no law. I mean, they may get I don't know now with Trump in office, but, you know, they were going to force everybody into these smart meters and this G5, and they're going to watch everything you do and watch your carbon footprint, and ultimately you won't be able to get up at night and take a poop, and they're going to charge you for it because that's what this is designed to do. This is all part of that. It's part of that whole run everybody like in 1984. But that being said, if you challenge them, and I believe that Cal and Josh's paperwork is perfect for that. The only thing they don't have is that, you know, you put them on notice and they kind of go into this thing where they're going to charge the guy because there's damages and put kind of and let him know that he's going to be liable for these damages. They don't have the last part in how to force them in through the court to pay those, but their success is that these guys always cave before it gets to that point because they know they're wrong, because they're under contract law and even under international law. There is a negotiation that goes on with contracts, and it is understood. So if you hold your ground and your jurisdiction and you document it, you're going to be so far ahead of everybody else. And other areas have actually gotten their town boards to make resolutions against those things. So the tide is turning against the electric companies, and they absolutely cannot force you to take that. And I would follow their plan up to the point they want us to perfect the end of it. That's our job. We haven't got to that yet because we're busy with all this other stuff. You know, if we could get this court of record in, that would be the battle there. Anyway, we'd be able to help them without doing any kind of fancy footwork, and that's kind of why we backed off in order to, because this case really brings us to the point of what we're going to end up having to do anyway, I believe, in order to have success in the courts. But along the way, when you, it's just like putting affidavits in and putting them on the record, see, their system doesn't hold up to light, and that puts light on them. And when you protest, that's part of a negotiation. It's part of a contract. They have to deal with you in a certain way. And so I would just tell anybody that if you got a problem with smart meters and the electric companies force them on you, I would go in and fill out the paperwork that Cal and Josh have on their In Power. I think it's INPOWER.com. And follow through with that because they've had many, many, many successes without getting to the end because they chicken out. And the other thing is get your neighbors involved, get your town board involved, get some other people. You know, going alone is a tough, tough thing. This is an emotional issue, and it is a health issue, and people are starting to wake up. So get some neighbors and get some people, and look at, you go into court, you got four or five people with you. The judge doesn't want to mess with that. They're more apt to behave, and eventually they'll come up with a settlement. They'll give you another meter. And, you know, they're going to tell you, oh, we're going to charge you more money for that meter because this or that. They can't do that. They're trying to change the contract in the middle of the game, and guess what? They can't. If you protest, they can't do it. So that means I'll go ahead and rest, John. That's what I want to let them know.
Yeah, if we can get a banner from them and their link, we'll put a banner up on the website and notify people. They can click on that banner and go over to their website to get all the info. I know on when it comes into the court side of things, if it has to get to where you got to file in the courts, we were going to work with them on a paper on that. I believe that's what we were going to do, right, Gerard?
Absolutely.
Work the legal side.
Yep.
We just haven't had the time because we've been so involved with so many other cases. But hopefully soon, you know, we'll be able to write something up with them make a good plan for that. But as far as notifying and putting the pressure on them, sending them a bill, and so on, they've got a good plan up for that point, which is running through notice and demands and different things of that nature. But if you can't win at the end of that day, the only other way then is to go into the court, and that's the part we haven't got together yet. So, all right, let's move on. Anything else, Jim?
Oh, yes, I have four more. The next question is an important issue that seems to come up a lot, the federal/national/real ID issue that some states seem to be currently enforcing, and it seems impending here in Pennsylvania in 2019. Any comment of action on those would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I don't know that I would want a real ID. We've got enough IDs as it is, and, you know, with the driver's license and all that, the state ID. But we don't need another ID. I mean, that seems to be federalizing. Is that a federal plan, the real ID? I believe it is, yes. Yeah, so it's a federal plan, and they're trying to get another connection. You know, they got some social security numbers. They got a bank accounts. They got access to our driver's licenses, I'm sure. They got access to our voting records. Now they want an ID, a national ID, and, you know, and it goes on and on and on and on. They got birth certificates. You know, birth certificates is something that's a recent thing. I mean, I wouldn't say really recent, but I think it was in the 1880s or 90s, I think it was. May have been a little lighter. I know recently I was doing some studying, and I came upon that, and I'll have to look exactly when it was. But, it really came into being when this birth certificate thing at least after 1871, at least after that. But in any event,
yeah, there were states in the United States that people weren't doing it up until the 1900s.
Yeah, I'm sure they were.
1920. Yeah. Nah, there was plenty of states where people just wrote it in the back of the Bible, and that's what they did, because that's what they always did. And the state didn't get that organized until later on. I mean, maybe New York State did, you know what I mean? But there were plenty of southern and western states where it was not the norm till much later.
All right, anyway, what else you got, Jan?
That real ID, they're not going to want you. You will not be able to get on a plane unless you have it, John. And I can't see.
Yeah,
I don't see Donald Trump allowing it to happen.
Right, and not only that, look, at if we start to get some leverage in the courts, we're not going to allow it to happen either. You know, the people will have a voice and a leverage, and we're not going to permit it. As a matter of fact, a lot of things they got going, they need to turn back around. We need to set the clocks back. We need to bring us back to, 1779. That's what we got to get to. But anyway, what else we got?
Okay, the next is a question.
1789, not 79.
Right. The next is a question about the SAFE Act, and then there's a couple comments. Has the team considered collecting the oaths and bonds for all of the defendants and place them in the record?
I believe we've already accepted their oaths and bonds. I think that's how we did start out. I know usually we do put that in. We may or may not have put that into this case, but I think we did. We did let them know that, as a matter of fact, I know we wrote about their oaths in our original complaint, and it's not really a complaint. It's an action. They keep wanting to call it a complaint, but it's not a complaint. We're not complaining to no one. We're taking action against someone. That's what we're doing. We're not complaining. And there's a vast difference between the two. So, that's where we're at with that. I think our next move is to go up against the judiciary. If we get thrown out of this case, we've got to go up against the judiciary. We also have to consider indictments here because these people, I mean, what more can they do that they haven't already done? As far as, warring against the Constitution, warring against the people. And, oh, boy, they don't like that word, warring. But that's the words of the United States Supreme Court. We're just quoting them. It's not our words. You know, they make such a big thing about sovereign. Oh, you're a sovereign people. Oh, you must be a sovereign citizen. Maybe they're sovereign citizens because they try to pull that they have sovereign, what do they call it, sovereign immunity. Sovereign immunity. Hey, wait a second. How is it that they can be sovereigns and we can't? You know? And we're going to make that case. We're going to make that point. Matter of fact, I'm making a list of a lot of things that we've got to make. And we've got a lot of cases that we're going to leverage into this case and to make our point, to show that they are out of control. They have robbed the people. These people need to be removed from office, and Trump needs to do something about this. I don't know which president did this. It might have been Obama, or it might have been, matter of fact, it probably was. But there was a president recently, you know, in the past 20, 30 years or so, not even that long ago, but there was a president who fired all the judges. Do we know who that president was? I forget who it was. But there was a president who fired all the judges, all the federal judges, and replaced them. That's what Trump needs to do. He needs to fire them and get rid of them for
Roosevelt put, like, I don't know, 14 justices to turn the court in order to do what he wanted to do. Now, I don't know if they made a law since then. I think it was Roosevelt, wasn't it?
Well, you know, look, is there a term on the federal judges? There's a term, isn't there? Is 14 years or something like that?
Some of them have a life term, John.
Well, that would be the United States Supreme Court judges, but I don't believe that that is the federal judges. The federal judges have terms, okay? They're not life terms. And any judge that has a life term, it requires Congress to do something. But the president can use the bully pulpit to push Congress to do something. Especially now, look, we're coming up the next series of elections, and I think we're going to pick up a lot of new congressmen. I think the Democrats are in real big trouble, and the Republican Party is going to pick up a lot of new people. That being the case, that's going to make Trump much more powerful. That's why he's out there stumping. He's constantly giving speeches. Anybody who's paying attention, you know, and watching and listening over YouTube for what's going on with him, he is constantly giving, going from state to state. This guy is busy, you know. I've never seen a president so busy. And he gets welcomed very well. I mean, he draws big crowds. People roar with him, and they love him, and rightly so. You know, he is trying to make America great again, and he's going to accomplish that. So he's stumping for all of these other people running for office, and so we'll get more powerful on the Republican Party. Not that I trust the Republican Party, but surely he seems to be able to handle them. And the more Republicans we can get into Congress and the Senate, then the more, you know, power and authority that we will be able to have. And Trump then can. And maybe we need to try to school Trump a little bit on this, if he needs it. Then he needs to be dealing with these, and he knows. He knows this already. He's already replaced quite a few. But he needs to deal with all of these judges and bad behavior. Those who have come to the end of their terms, he needs to get rid of them. He needs to dump them. Okay, and get new people in there. And those who have not come to the end of their terms, he needs to push Congress at the bully pulpit to get rid of these guys for bad behavior, because they are refusing the people, the Constitution. And that's the case we are going to make. And the case that we're going to make on this, when we go after the judiciary, is one that we can pass over to the president, and hopefully he will act upon it. You know, we're going to try to school him a little more on some things. Maybe we'll send him some personal, papers for purpose of education, and we'll see where we go with it, you know. But anyway, did I lose the question or did I answer it?
No, you got it. Right. So the next two kind of run together. They're more of a statement than a question, so I'll read them together. The bonding agent should be noticed of pending action against the defendants, which will apply pressure to resolve any claims. The judges and magistrates should be noticed as well through a notary and process server, not on the record, with his oath and bond, expressing he is bound by his oath.
So, okay. All right, well, look, if they have any papers on this to school me a little bit on the bonds and the oaths and any kind of positions or leverage that we may be able to use in history in the past, then by all means, put something together and get it to me, and I'll look into it myself a little bit, because that does seem to make some sense. But again, you know, we need a lot of help here. People can, you know, research certain areas for us and want to spend some time helping us to research those areas and give us the information so that we can be even more schooled than what we are. By all means, we're open for that, and this sounds like an issue that we might be able to leverage, you know, something with it. And but again, it's, you know, I don't. I'll have to research myself to see how we could do that. So, all right. Anything else?
Just a comment on researching things for us. I keep getting little messages from people that say, gee, there's something good on this or that in this book, and they give me the title of a book, or something like, you know, this video has something about this or that. Well, you know, I don't have time to read the whole book to find out what it is and where it is. If you're going to send information in on researching, please send where in the book or DVD or whatever it is the information is located and what it consists of. It would be a great assistance to us. I guess the other little announcement, we're still short of someone for June 16th, I think it is. Natural healing call, and we could use some more for the July call. So if anybody here knows of anybody or would like to give a 30 to 40 minute presentation on natural healing of any sort that you're familiar with and say expert in, please give me a call, 814-531-5363, or just email me, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll get you set up. That's all that I have. If Gerard doesn't have anything.
Do we have anybody that... Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Robert Overhuel has been doing some interesting work out in Michigan. He's on the call tonight. He's been working on the real estate tax issue, and he'd like to say a few words about that. So.
Yep, go right ahead.
Okay, let's see if I can find him here. He was down near the bottom of the first page a little while ago.
Yeah, I think he's been trying to get a hold of me the last few days, but I've been so... I don't get a minute to myself here lately.
Right. Trying to find him. He kind of disappeared on the list. I thought he was up near the top of the list. Here he is.
Hello.
Yep, we hear you.
Hey, Robert. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, John. John, I'll try to get you tomorrow.
Okay.
It's short, what I have. Seems that a lot of these city managers, especially ours here in this town, does not know what's going on. And I lay most of it to he's relying lightly on his. And I doggone near dropped over a few months ago when I found out about this. His assistant city manager is a bar attorney. And what I'm going to say is this. I think people had better start getting involved very seriously and very fast in their local government. And if you have a city manager, start paying them visits. Of course, they don't forget me too easily because I refer to all of them as my public servants. And they get a little squirrely when you start talking to them like that. The other point being is, and John and everybody's right about the sheriff. But the sheriff is not going to do anything. We got to move him. And I'm writing a document now in which I am placing the burden right on the sheriff to call a common law grand jury, a common law court, an Article 3, and under the rules of common law, meaning there shall be no judge or bar attorney involved at all in the grand jury. And he has 30 days to call.
And the trial jury.
Yes. Correct. And he has 30 days to call it. Otherwise, I'm going to deem it as a waiver. And if I deem it as a waiver, I will file a default on him. And currently what I'm looking at is a default into bad behavior. So I would suggest that our members and even people that are not our members to maybe take a look at this and get a little active, because there's a lot of stuff, like John and Gerard and everybody's been saying, there's a lot of stuff coming down. We should be ready. And I yield.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else, Jan?
I got something.
No,
later,
that was the only request, unless Gerard has more.
Okay.
Yeah, I got a couple of things. I don't know if I read last week what an attorney said in a case that I was familiar with, but basically, you know, their view is that the Constitution is basically, once you're out of law school, it's not worth anything. He says this is an attorney's words. No one cares about constitutional theory once they leave law school. It has zero real-world application outside of scholarly writing.
That's
the statutes
right.
You're dealing with all have withstood constitutional scrutiny. Well, that's a lie. They have not. But anyway, they just assume so. Anyway, you say your job now is to explain how your unique circumstance warrant a favorable result. So basically, they're looking at everything very statutorily, and how does the statute fit? And he explains how the judge applies and interprets the law and the statute. And they're basically, you know, they're trying to stick, you know, the square pegs in the square holes. It's like an IBM card, and that's where it lines up. And there is no movement elsewhere. He also said, he says here, look at the courts. Where is it here? Let me see if I can find it. He said the courts are not going to do a de novo. Wait a minute. This is precisely why it's not in your best interest to spend your valuable time with the court's attentions on these arguments. Trial courts don't concern themselves with conducting a de novo review of constitutionality of statutes that has survived constitutional scrutiny. Is the mindset is this: what that is what the law is, whether I, the judge, agree with it or not, and it's my job to apply and interpret the law. And you know that, and that might be okay for a judge to think like that as far as interpreting the law. But that's why you need a jury, because the jury can rule on the law if the judge cannot. It's up to the jury. A jury can nullify the law. So if the judge has to be totally statutory and stick the round peg in the round hole, then it's up to the jury to apply it and actually look at anything that would be extenuating. When you work with statutes, there is no extenuating circumstances. Were you doing 70 and a 50? That's all they want to know. It doesn't matter if you were trying to save somebody's life or anything else. It's just, did you do it or didn't you do it? That's it. They don't want to discuss anything else. And that's the problem with the system we have. So just so you understand, you know, and all these attorneys, you know, they basically have been trained the same way. I mean, even our jurisdictionary course, John, remember the guy said, don't mess with the Constitution, stick with the statutes. And in a certain sense, it is easier to stick with the statutes because there is no veering off in gray areas. It's kind of like, you know, the statute's the statute. And as long as everybody agrees with that, I guess that's fine. But if you're violating
we've already agreed with that, and you could read about that, and everyone can read about that in Article 1, Section 8. We've agreed there. We've got 18 powers to the legislators, and not one power beyond. And then when you go into 9, Section 9 of Article 1, we get into a little bit of a more what would you call it? Things they can't do, okay? You got the Bill of Rights or the Bill of Prohibition. Well, that's what that 9 would be prohibitions, okay, what they're forbidden from doing. And yet they ignore every single one of those things. I'll tell you what, when we bring all our cases together, we can show that they have ignored everything. They love to quote, to give us our rights and everything else. They love to quote Amendment 14, the 14th Amendment, because that 14th Amendment to me has become so clear that it is part of civil law. It moves us into civil law, and we become part of that. You know, when you go and file a case, you get a cover sheet, and it's a civil cover sheet. They don't permit anything else. It's a civil law cover sheet. When they do the summons and they fill out the summons for you, it's a civil summons. They call it a civil suit. They call it a complaint. We call it an action. They deny our action, want to make it a complaint. No, we've got an action at law or an action in law. We're not here about statutory things because civil means statutes. These are statutory courts. It's a statutory cover sheet. It's a statutory summons. The federal rules of civil procedure, federal rules of statutes, okay? They have changed the laws. They've gone far beyond their ability and their authority, shall I say, or their jurisdiction in the writing of these rules, okay? And these rules became empowered, I believe, in 1939. They were written in 1937. And between 37, 38, 39, they became full power. But Congress had been careful to place it that anything in there that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. And let me tell you something. Their rules are all null and void. You know, I used to say, well, okay, we can apply these rules or we can apply those rules. It's okay. These sound like good ideas. And I guess we can do that to some degree, but we really got to be careful because it's a trap. the whole thing is a trap. Their 14th Amendment is a trap. I don't have any 14th Amendment rights, because those rights that they're given me by man, given me by Congress, given me by whatever authority they think they've got. I don't have those rights. I have unalienable rights. You can find my rights in the Bill of Rights. These people, again, they're just hell-bent on destroying what we have. They do not want it. They're making way too much money. It's a cushy job, and it's a wink and a nod between these people. They have total 100% control, and they don't care about the people. And they need to be held accountable. So anyway, let's take a look at this paperwork we've put in, the case we've put in. And this is a reply to the defendant's reply, okay? They've come out after us concerning Rule 12. They want to dismiss the case. That is the Attorney General for New York State here, which is, the attorney picking up to defend the governor here and both houses here in New York. And so he's written a very sad case. I mean, look at it. This is what they got. And it is all they got. They got nothing, okay? But they talk as if they got something, and the judges talk as if they got something, and they think they got something, but they got nothing, okay? They got absolutely nothing. And so anyway, they wrote their reply. They wrote their papers concerning the rules. We replied to that, and the judge says, well, you guys can have a second reply, meaning the other side, not us. But we disagree, okay? We disagree with that. And I'm going to read the paper and what we wrote, and it'll be clear on why we disagree with this. But they bring up two points, and they're trying to throw us out on one of these two positions. The defendant's point number one, he says, despite the plaintiff's disavowal of the characterization of their Second Amendment challenges to the New York State SAFE Act and numerous other firearms-related statutes as a sovereign citizen challenge, the plaintiff's claim is in fact properly classified as a sovereign citizen challenge that the court must dismiss as a frivolous. Now, where do they get this? This is not in the rules. There's nothing in the rules that be dismissed because something is frivolous. There's nothing in the rules that says because you got this a sovereign citizen challenge, which we do not. We do not have a sovereign citizen challenge. But they claim we do, and we keep telling them we don't, but they keep saying we do. I think we know more what we're writing than they do. We don't. Nevertheless, this is their position, and nevertheless, the rules do not permit for a sovereign citizen challenge to be dismissed for any reason. Rule 12 does not give any power or authority for that. So let's read this paper, and then there's a second point that they pick up, and the second point is plaintiff's claim must still be dismissed based upon the doctrine of collateral estoppel. I can't believe how dumb these people are. I just don't understand, and I don't understand how any judge can think that they can get away with these two points to get rid of us for collateral estoppel, since these same plaintiffs, no, it's not the same plaintiffs, litigated and lost identical legal claims. No, we did not litigate anything. We were thrown out under Rule 12. We never had our day in court, and claims in state courts in 2013. You know, we did bring this case, a group of us here in New York, and there's only maybe two or three of us, maybe four. I don't think there's anything more than that, at least I'm not aware of it, that was on that last case. I know Gerard was on it, and I was on it, and there was maybe one or two other people that have signed into this case who are on it. But as far as that's concerned, the rest of them are not. We already told them that, and they still make this point on their second reply. Well, that's not true. Okay, this is not the same people. And it was never litigated. Every case, they quoted about six or eight cases, and every single case said the same thing. And I want to read that. It said that, if it wasn't heard, there is no collateral estoppel. It doesn't exist. It has to be heard. Okay, this is our paper. It's only two or three pages. Let's see how many. It's two pages. That's all it is. So we're going to read it. So this is plaintiff's reply to the defendant's reply. It is obviously fair-minded that defendants should get last word. After all, they are the challenged and must defend. With that being said, when the defendants moved the court via Rule 12, the challenger became the challenged. And for a brief period, the plaintiffs become the defendants. And therefore, last word is appropriately the plaintiffs. Therefore, so that's our position. How can they deny, who are these people that they can't even figure that out, okay? And they think that they're going to pull the wool over our eyes and give these people last word. What we get last word. And we've already covered these positions, so but we want to really, you know, solidify them, shore them up. Therefore, on and for the record, plaintiffs herein replied to plaintiff, to defendants replied to plaintiff's answer. Defendants raised the following invalid, feeble point in an effort to elude answering the action, and the plaintiffs rebut said invalid, feeble points as followed. Now, I read the point one, and I'll read it again real quick. This is defendant's point one. Despite the plaintiff's disavowal of the characterization of their Second Amendment challenge in the New York State Safe Act, to the New York State Safe Act and numerous other firearms-related statutes as a sovereign citizen challenge, the plaintiff's claim is in fact properly classified as a sovereign citizen challenge that the court must dismiss as frivolous. Now, plaintiffs, this is us now answering to that statement. Plaintiffs reiterated reply, because we've already said this, but we're reiterating them. Federal Rule 12 does not provide for either frivolous claims to be dismissed or a sovereign citizen's challenge to be dismissed. They need to be heard before declared such. Rule 12 only provides for the dismissal if it appears beyond doubt that the plaintiffs can prove no set of facts in support of their claim. See Action at Law, lines 22-48 concerning numerous sets of facts. Now, defendant's point two, plaintiff's claim must still be dismissed based upon the doctrine of collateral estoppel. Since these same plaintiffs litigated and lost identical legal claims in state courts in 2013, I'll respond to their point two. Plaintiffs reiterated reply, in other words, we've already said it, we're saying it again. All the cases the defendants used to defend the doctrine of collateral estoppel shared one common chord that supports the plaintiff's position in that it requires, and this is a quote, a full and fair opportunity to litigate a valid and final judgment on the merits, the issue sought to be precluded from re-litigation must have been necessarily determined in the prior proceedings. That never happened. We were cast out, as we're always cast out, by Rule 12, and we're not going to allow it this time. Anyway, and so that's the end of the quote, and every single case has that quote or something similar to it. It's the same thing. It must be heard, and it must be litigated, and it must be concluded in order for an estoppel to collateral estoppel. And since such a determination was not met, there is no estoppel. Additionally, the plaintiffs are not the same. In conclusion, a court of justice is to hear before a judge. That is the purpose of any action, to prove or not the claims by demonstrating through debate to the tribunal for such judgment. The general rule is that a complaint should not be dismissed unless it appears beyond doubt that the plaintiffs can prove no set of facts in support of his claim. And the validity of the claim can only be known after the answer. Now, we already know what they're going to do. I mean, I'd be very surprised if they let this case go through. But that's okay. We then got to move to the next step. And to move to the next step, we do need money. Not a lot of money, but we do need money. We need a couple of $1,000s at least. I mean, if we were to get lawyers to do the case that we want to go forward with now, I'm telling you, hundreds of thousands of dollars without a doubt, without just right off the top, they're going to want $50,000. It's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they'll have a whole team of lawyers working, and they'll lose anyway, okay? And they will never run it the way we'll run it. How are you going to sue the judiciary if they're going to allow the judiciary to rule on a case? That can't happen. And so, you know, we need to produce a case to be brought before the courts with a special magistrate, not one who is a judge or a magistrate of the courts, because we're going to sue every single one of them, all 94 federal districts. We may even have to include the United States Supreme Court, because to my knowledge, as of yet, they have not responded. And so we're going to write a paper to them to find out what they're doing. How come they have not responded? At least tell us to go to hell or respond, one or the other. But they refuse to do either at this point, so it seems. Now, we don't know. You know, it is kind of summertime, but the courts are always open, even the United States Supreme Court. And I called them up before we even went forward with some of this paperwork, and they said that people will it'll be looked at, and the proper individuals will get it, and they will respond. But they have not yet. So we'll see where they go. Okay, whether we're going to have to add the United States Supreme Court in. If by chance we do not get thrown out under Rule 12, which I may go into cardiac arrest if that happens, I really do not believe we're going to not be thrown out, but if that happens, well, then the case is over. They now have to answer. They cannot answer. And that's why I know they're going to throw us out. They know that they cannot answer. Nobody can answer the papers we wrote on them. To answer is to actually show and prove that they are subverters, that they are tyrants, that they, or they'll have to agree. And if they agree, they're going to lose the case. And if they disagree, they're going to lose the case. So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They have no choice but to throw us out under Rule 12 and think that we're just going to go away and do nothing. That's not going to happen. First of all, we're going to make the appeal, and we're going to make the appeal in a certain way to let it be known. We're only doing it this way because we have to go through this, but the authority ultimately lies in the people and not in these judges, okay? And we will go up to Albany, and we will talk to these judges, and we will make our case, and we'll see where that goes. Meanwhile, we're going to see what goes on with the United States Supreme Court, give them a little more time. And also at the same time, we're going to start writing, okay, if this happens, we've got to go through that appellate process. And again, I always tell everyone, don't bother going through the appellate process. Go after them directly, because we can go after them directly. We don't have to appeal, okay? But we'll do both at the same time. We'll run the appellate process through on the one side, and we will sue on the other side. For these people, subversion and denial, robbing justice from the people, robbing us of our Article III courts, robbing of us of our unalienable rights, taking control of a house that they have no power, no authority, no jurisdiction over, and of course charging us money at the same time as they do these things to us. So interesting times. Exciting case. We do need help. If you're not given $5 a month or more just for our survival, you need to be doing that. But beyond that, everybody needs to take that extra step right now to help us to prepare for this next case. Like I said, we're going to need a couple of $1,000. So if people can order, you know, can help out with $20 or $50 or $100, and some people can do $100 or $500, but look it. Most people, everyone, you can do an additional $5 or $20 or $30 or whatever. We need money. You know, this is not free. My pockets are drained out. I drained my pockets out a long time ago running through what we're doing here. And we really need the people to step up and do this. We also need the people to step up and become educated, because I'm going to say it again, and I'll say it over and over again, and I'm sure Jefferson said this enough times, and he's probably tired of hearing himself saying it, but I'm almost tired of hearing myself saying it. But if you think you can have liberty without knowledge, you're fooling yourself. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. This is why we've lost. You know, we've been studying this for quite some time. 10 years we've been studying the law. And And I'll tell you what, you know, I don't understand how this happened. I can't believe that that many people are this ignorant that they've permitted and allowed these courts to get away with and get to where they are today and not be held accountable and get away with this. People don't even understand the simplicity of the Constitution. It is so simple, and yet they miss it. They miss the whole thing because a lawyer says so. That's why, and we believe them. Look at these lawyers are trained by the elite. I mean, this is the whole purpose. They're the minions of the New World Order. It is important for them to have a statutory process. Babylon is where we're at. This is Babylon. And civil law comes from Babylon. And that's what we have. We have Babylonian law.
Why they feel comfortable calling us sovereign citizen, because if you challenge the statute and say it's unconstitutional, what they hear is that you're saying that that statute does not apply to you because it's unconstitutional. That makes you a sovereign citizen, because sovereign citizens don't believe that these laws apply to them. Well, a sovereign citizen that doesn't believe that laws apply to him, what they're leaving out is they don't believe that unconstitutional laws apply to them. And it's got nothing to do with being a sovereign citizen. It's got something to do with being we the people, the sovereigns. We're the sovereigns. They're not the sovereigns. They have a clip sovereignty, but they've forgotten that. And they think that we're less than them and we're stupid. And they need to tell us what to do. So when we come in and we say that statute is unconstitutional, oh, you're protesting a statute that has withstood the muster of constitutional challenge. That's baloney. Nobody's constitutionally challenged anything. When those statutes came out and some of the senators and congressmen go, oh, that's unconstitutional, that's a bad statute, nobody took it to court in order to mark that and take it to the end. No. They just complained once and they went away with whimpered away with their tail between their legs. And so now they're presuming that these statutes have withstood the muster of the Constitution, and nothing can be further from the truth. And that's why they get away with calling us sovereign citizens who don't think the law applies to us, which could nothing could be further from the truth. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. I understand, you know, why they think this, because they've been taught that.
Well, you know, the other thing is this. If they want to talk about precedents and that their precedents have been held so long, common law precedents has been held for over 3,500 years, almost 3,600 years, maybe 3,600 years at this point, as a matter of fact. So how are their statutes going to beat that? Okay. The other thing is it's an oxymoron to call us sovereign citizens. To call anyone a sovereign citizen is an oxymoron, at least the way that they interpret the word citizen. They interpret it under the 14th Amendment. So they do this for two reasons. Number one, they want to mark us as a sovereign citizen and therefore, put fear in the hearts of particularly law enforcement that we are cop killers. We may come into the court with a gun or something, you know. So that's one of the reasons they do it. And the second reason is to put us under the 14th Amendment, which they've already established identifies with statutes. How can you be a statutory sovereign? What is that? How can you be a statutory sovereign? It's an oxymoron. The sovereign individual is one, of course, that is under the law of the land that we have in this case, okay? It's under the law of God, period. We are sovereign only second to God. Now, God, of course, is the only sovereign, but he has given us let's call it a clip sovereign. Okay. Of course, you know, God's law is God's law, and that's it. We can't debate, argue it. It is the law. But he has given us the power and the authority to make law through a constitution to control those people who we have chosen to rule. Not rule over us, but to rule. And we've given them authority. We've detailed it in Article 1, Article 2, and Article 3, and 4, 5, 6. And seven, I think there's seven altogether, if I remember. So we've given them the authority, and we've given them boundaries of those of that authority. And God has given us the authority to give them the authority so that we can be self-ruling. Okay, we have government by consent of the people. And we have unalienable rights, and therein is our being sovereign, right there. We have unalienable rights. We have a First Amendment right. We have a Second Amendment right, and so on. And we have more rights than the Ten Amendments. Okay, so we are sovereign people. But to be a sovereign citizen, the only thing they ever talk about, if you ever listen to these judges, read our cases, read the papers that the judges have written, read the papers that this attorney general has written, and you will see they focus in on due process under the 14th Amendment, a statute that they wrote for us. And that also has history that goes all the way back to 1871. And even into the Judiciary Act. My goodness, the Judiciary Act, it was the first place where they violated the people, putting us under our courts under the rules of Chancery. No, we should be under the rules of common law. We're under American jurisprudence, which identifies with positions and truths that are from the common law. But anyway, this is what they're doing, and we got to battle them. No one else is doing what we're doing, and we need to do this. So please support us.
I mean,
give us a few bucks. Give up a few bagels and a few cups of coffee. Come on, we can all do this, Gerard.
I don't know if you remember the clip of Obama, and he said, "The United States is no longer a Christian nation."
Yeah.
And
I recently heard that again.
Yeah, but you know what? So he's saying it used to be, right?
Well, that's true.
look, we got David Barton on our site, and he's arguing one nation under God and how the forefathers were Christian and this and that. And Obama just admitted it. It's no longer a Christian nation, which means it once was. So I want to know what act turned it the other way. You know what I mean? If it's no longer.
The Act of 1871, so they think.
Well, there you go. But I thought that was pretty interesting that he's there saying it's no longer a Christian nation, which means that he's acknowledging that it once was a Christian nation, which is, that's pretty good. That's the only way you get him to acknowledge anything, right?
Well, 1781, we have the Organic Act of 1781, which when they created a state within a state within a city. And a lot of people, it's a little difficult to see, but it's clearly there, and it's clearly there proven by all the other acts that they built upon it. And from that point, they've taken us away from the beginning, the foundation of our law as far as America is concerned, with the Declaration of Independence. Okay, they think that they can, just shove God aside and get between him and his people. And, we don't need all of America to be, God's people. We hope that a lot of America is God's people, but look, we don't need all of America. It's those who are participating, those who are working, those who have put this together for us, our founding fathers. They put it together for us, and they're the ones that covenanted with God for themselves and their posterity. It is eternal. You cannot get in between God and his people, and don't think that his wrath is not going to come upon them. The time has come, and I think this is a time of judgment, clearly. And it may be even more than we realize, but nevertheless, the wrath of God is going to come upon them. As Jefferson said, how did he put it? I fear for the people, or something like that. God's wrath will not rest forever. Okay, it's going to come. Today is that day. It's coming. I mean, we can clearly see it. We can hear the drums beating. Judgment is coming. So they're going to get it. Once the deep state is totally exposed and these people start going to jail and these judges have no more power because they have nobody to protect them anymore, then they're going to be in trouble. That's what we're going to get. We're here. Okay. I think we've come to the end of that. Is Brent, by the way, are you ready to take the panel here, Gerard?
Yeah, I am, and I also had a couple of other things that people wrote to me. about that I feel that it's necessary for me to comment on. Because I mean, it was a couple weeks ago, and last week we went off on Wild Blue Chant, and so I didn't get a chance. So I want to do it really quickly, hopefully this week, and hopefully I won't cut into too much of Brent's time here. But 2 weeks ago we had a discussion about radical Muslimism and different things, and Brent went on about how he got into a kind of a match with a Muslim man that said Muhammad had no sin, and he stuck up against him, and they almost came to fisticuffs, you know? And then, you know, because no man doesn't have any sin, he said not even the Blessed Virgin Mary had any sin. Well, with one fell swoop, you just and alienated every Muslim and every Catholic that is on this site, because you when you go after somebody's mother, the quickest way to get two men to fight is say something about their mother. And so, you know, there are certain ones, even the Muslims respect the Virgin Mary as a sinless woman. I mean, that's the connection between Christianity and the Muslims, is Mary. I mean, Muhammad's daughter was named Fatima. You know, he named her, and I wanted to just read something that shows how this thing comes full circle, you know. Hang on a minute, I got a barking dog. Come on. Go through, if you're going through, I'm on a call here. I need to stop the dogs barking here. Just bear with me a minute until the noise level. Come on, guys, go through. I'm on a national call here, and you're like disturbing me here. Okay, so anyway, I wanted to just read here a thing about the Muslims, and I don't know that much about the Muslims. I don't know. I know that there's many sects of them, and I know that jihad is one of the things of their religion. I don't know if every sect, like Sunnis and all of them, have that. And look, at Christians and Muslims have been fighting for years, but there's a line between they actually respect Jesus Christ as a prophet, and they, let me see here.
They also hold to the Old Testament, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The first five, but I think they hold to the whole Old Testament, yeah.
Right. So over here was something that was written. The Quran, which is the Bible of the Muslims, has many passages concerning the Blessed Virgin. First of all, the Quran believes in her Immaculate Conception and also in her virgin birth. The Quran has also verses on the Annunciation, the Visitation, the Nativity. Angels are pictured as accompanying the Blessed Mother and saying, "O Mary, God has chosen you and purified you and elected you above all the women of the earth." In the 19th chapter of the Quran, there are 41 verses on Jesus and Mary. There's such a strong defense of the virginity of Mary that the Quran in the fourth book attributes the condemnation of the Jews to their monstrous calumny of the Virgin Mary. Mary, then, is for the Muslims the true Sayyada, the lady. The only possible serious rival in their creed would be Fatima, the daughter of Muhammad himself. But after the death of Fatima, Muhammad wrote, "Thou shalt be the most blessed of women in paradise after marrying." A variant of the text Fatima is made to say, "I surpass all women except Mary." So that being said, there is a line between the Muslims and the Christians. Will that ever develop into their conversion? Who's to say? But myself, being raised a Catholic, Mary is special to us. You know, just imagine, you know, when Jesus started his public life, you know, at 30 years old, his first miracle was at the behest of his mother at the wedding feast of Cana. And she said, "Look, they're out of wine." And running out of wine in those days, that was a major embarrassment. It was something that you just couldn't let happen. People would never forget it. You'd be known as the no wino couple, you know what I mean? So she said to Jesus, "Do something, they're out of wine." And he said, "What is this to thee and to me? Don't you know my time has not yet come?" And she didn't argue with him. She turned around to the porters and she said, "Do what he says." That was her relationship. because he was her son, and he was her truly mother. Look at, he's true God, he's true man. And he told the porters to fill the vessels with water, and he said words over them, and then he instructed them to take a sample to the head porter. And when the head porter drank it, he said, "Oh my goodness," he said, "this is the best wine I've ever tasted." He said, most weddings use the good wine first, and then when everybody gets good and drunk, they put the bad wine out, you know, the cheaper stuff. He said, "You've saved the best to last." So that shows us that when he does something for his mother, he overdoes it, that there is a relate. Nothing in the Bible is by accident. That's to show his relationship with her. And don't forget, when he hung on that cross, and John was there, and Mary was there, and he looked over, and he said, "Mother, behold thy son. Son, behold thy mother." That was the day she became the mother of all of us, and an advocate. Now, I know people say, you don't need any advocate between God and man. Look, Mary's not adored. She's revered. And she is the mother of God. And if you don't understand that thing, when Mary went to Elizabeth, after the angel had told her, I hear somebody bleeding through. Somebody's mic is not muted. Thank you. No?
Yeah, too many people are trying.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so anyway, when Mary found out she was...
Yeah, go ahead, Rod.
Okay. When Mary found out that she was going to be the mother of Christ, she went to see her cousin Elizabeth, who was already in her 6 months of birth, and she was in her 80s. That was a miracle God did to bring John the Baptist forth, who would preach about Christ before he came. And in Luke 36, it says, "And behold, thy cousin Elizabeth, she also had conceived a son in her old age. And the 6 month with her that is barren, because no word shall be impossible with God." So then it says, "And she came to pass that when Elizabeth heard the salutation of Mary, the infant leapt in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Ghost," which means these are not her words, this is God's words. "And she cried out with a loud voice and said, Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb. And whence is it to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For behold, as soon as the voice of thy salutation sounded in my ears, the infant in my womb leapt for joy. And blessed art thou that thou hast believed because of those things." And then Mary said, "My soul doth magnify the Lord, and the Spirit had rejoiced in God my Savior, because he had regarded the humility of his handmaiden. For behold, henceforth all generations shall call me blessed." That's her being inspired. So I don't believe she's a sinner. I don't believe she could have been a sinner. I don't believe that God would have allowed her, you know. I believe he preserved her from the very instant for the job that she had to do. And so we can argue about that. We shouldn't get into these discussions here, but since it was brought out, and I know there's lots of Catholics who were offended that...
Where was this brought out, Gerard? Was this brought out on our site?
Yes, well, Brent said even Mary was a sinner. And, I mean, I could hear every Catholic in the audience go...
Yeah, well, again, I don't know that we want to get into doctrine, you know. I mean, this becomes debates, you know. I mean, there's only one doctrine of the Bible, but it is true that every Christian group, whether they're Catholics, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Baptists, they all have their little things that they believe, which may or may not be true, but we don't want to really get into that, arguing those things or debating them or trying to push them on others. I think the key thing, though, is that, we have to honor God. We have to worship God, and we know that no man cometh unto the Father but by Christ. I mean, that's what he said, and either that's true or it's not. But that is that's doctrine of the Bible, of course, and I know that you agree with that, and all Christians,
absolutely,
I believe, agree with that. And that's the key thing. But all these other things, I think we got to be real careful with, you know.
Well,
especially,
if you look at, we have to hold on to the faith as we've learned it and sacred tradition as it was taught. And so there, look at, they said everything Christ said was not put in a book. As a matter of fact, one of the apostles says it could not be contained in a book, all the things he said. So I believe there's other things that Christians have come to know by virtue of coming to know Christ. And he reveals things to people in his time. So, you know, I'm not saying that there's any new revelations. It's only to bring you to a revelation of who he is in your life. And that's the revelations that you should be getting. Anyway, I just felt that I had to say something because I got a couple of replies and
right. Well, I think we do have a Sunday program at 11 a.m. and we can look at these things there. But even there, we don't want to get into denominational thinking, and that's really the danger where we may be moving. We've got to be careful because that will separate us. We don't want separation.
Right.
We want
to
have the mind of Christ if we're going to come together in Christian thought. And again, we do have a place for that on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. in this room. But if we're going to come together in Christian thought, of course, it's the mind of God. It's the mind of the Bible. It's the Bible is the mind of Christ. It's the mind of God. So, but let's... let's try to bring it over there, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. So, anyway, that was my shtick, so to speak. And I was supposed to make the announcement that these opinions are not necessarily NLA's, but my opinions. So, there you go. Thank you.
Okay. All right. We got it. All right. Is Brent, are you unmuted, Brent? I saw him here. Ah, he is here. You unmuted, Brent? Star 6 unmute. Okay, he's unmuted.
I'm here.
Okay, let me introduce Brent. Brent is the author of The Excellence in the Common Law, of the Common Law, I believe it's, and his name is Brent Winters. His website is commonlawyer.com, and Brent's going to teach us something tonight, and you got the mic.
Thanks.
And Gerard, the controls
stick
here now, right? Yeah. Okay, everybody, I've moved into Q&A, so if anybody wants to ask a question or comment, we've got to go to the Q&A to get them. But go ahead, Brent. You got it.
Thank you, John. Well, keep in mind, again, all of my comments are my own. They do not necessarily reflect the points of view of anybody else that may be connected with this conference call.
Well, I do think that most of what you have to say, at least I agree with.
Well,
most,
I'm saying
we're not going to be perfect,
Well, here's the I think the controlling point. The controlling point is men need to think for themselves, and they
that's
need to
right.
say what they think, and that's why that's the most important part of our common law. And if we're not willing to do that, then we won't come out of our troubles. The reason people are attracted to DJ Trump, if they are, is because he does say what he thinks. If there's anything about him, he's forthright, and that's what's been refreshing to some people, because we're tired of the mamsy-pamsy, milksop, effeminate men that have held the levers of power. And men, that's pushing it too far. And it's not pushing it too far to say they're deeply sexually compromised. That's just part of it. The other part of it is, you know, people say, what is politics? It's the art of saying one thing while you're thinking quite another. And that causes intrigue and cover-up. Is there anybody in this world that will truly just say what they think? I was recently reading about John Wayne, grew up with John Wayne, but I didn't know him. But now that we have the Internet, I can get to know things about him. I'm fascinated by his personality, what happened to him, who influenced him. But the reason he never got an award for his movies was, of course, because he said what he thought. He came to convictions, and it's a fascinating story how he came to those convictions. And, of course, his enemies said he's too simplistic. He really doesn't understand. Well, I know, I think, on the whole, his enemies were too simplistic. He made mistakes. He did things he regretted. Of course, we all do. That's why we stand in need of help from our Maker. Let's go to the Declaration of 76. Declaration of 76, paragraph 29. Paragraph 29, we're going through it step by step and blow by blow. And it says this. I'm reading from the document. This is our organic document as Americans, one of them. It says, he has excited domestic insurrection among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. Now, the reason the Declaration of 76 is ignored, set aside, never read, as I said, our organic law, according to the Proclamation of the U.S. Congress. One of the great reasons is because it takes a religious position, and it takes a position against the red man that people don't want to listen to anymore. Well, these are history. I like history, and well, of course, I like the real history, what really happened. And it says here that this is Tom Jefferson, the chief drafter. He said that the British were bringing upon the Americans the merciless Indian savages. What does he mean by that? Well, I guess we could start at the beginning. Savages. What does the word savage mean? There's a very well-known family from England. Many of them came to America. He was one of the great men that came over with William the Conqueror in 1066, and his name was La Savage. He was a Frenchman, and savage is Latin and a French name, and savage is the Latin, which in French is a Latin tongue, the word for woods. They were people, these red men were people, especially on the eastern seaboard in New England and all along the coast. They lived in the woods. And so the Latins called people that lived in woods savages. Well, it doesn't mean that they necessarily have this other characteristic or that, but it does mean that they are woods people. My folk at home used to talk about woods colts. A woods colt was a boy or a girl that was born out of wedlock, and nobody knew who his father was. Because people had horses like that. They'd turn them out in the pasture, they'd come home with a colt, and they wouldn't know who sired it or what other horse sired it. So that's the idea here with the word savages fundamentally. But he says they're without mercy, and their known rule of warfare didn't make a distinction between age and different ages, children, didn't make a distinction between men and women, the weaker sex, the feminine sex, the kind sex, and the man, the male, and or didn't make a distinction about people's conditions, whether they're, as we say today, medically idiots, mentally challenged people, retired. They just killed everybody, slaughtered them like animals. And this is a fact of history, not in the hundreds, not in the thousands, but in the tens upon tens upon tens of thousands of New Englanders especially, and all down through the colonies, were slaughtered. We have on record, we know of 1,500 settlers, 1,500 at least, that we know about, were roasted alive and eaten by the red man in Kentucky. That's fact. We discover that in the New England, in those days, and this is no slam against them, 80% of white Americans whose families have been here since before the Civil War, at least 80%, I've read the statistics, carry red blood in their veins. To be an American, part of that is to be mixed up in all sorts of ways, and one of those ways is that our ancestors, when they came here, they did what people do when they get together with other people, they make babies, and we're all mixed up that way beyond probably what most of us could even begin to understand. But the red man figures into the race of the Americans very strongly. But it is also true that our ancestors, for example, if we're from Europe, our ancestors were enslaved, and they were barbarous beyond belief, just like people complain about the red man in America. So this is not a slam against them. It's a fact of reality. If men are not Christian, they will eat each other eventually. The Bible says that we are to love one another. We love one another, but if we don't follow that point of view, eventually we will eat one another. Not only economically, we will kill and steal and destroy, but also cannibalism becomes a great part of that. And it is a great note that people engage in cannibalism and false religion routinely around the world, regardless of how civilized the nation is. That's why you hear stories today about spirit cooking. The Hillary Clinton clan and all that bunch in politics, we heard all those stories about them being involved in that. those things are true around the world. They always have been. I've been places on the other side of the world where people do eat people. They just eat them. They are what we call cannibals. And this is not unusual. It's part of being of the race of Adam. And if you're not Christian in your culture, these things will become a part of the people. Now, plenty of people will argue with me about that. All I can say is I'm a student of history. I like to read it. I've been reading it for decades, and I've found that to be true all over the world, and I've even seen it. And I think I see it's even true in the more civilized parts of the world. That's why loving one another is so much important than eating one another, and that's what Christ said, love one another. Honor all men, it says. That doesn't mean to eat them. That means to honor them. Well, the French Jesuits, here's what's going on. This is what's behind paragraph 29. The French Jesuits, for decades before, had falsely incited the Indian tribes in Canada and in New England against the New England colonists, leading them in murder of men, women, children, and the elderly and the crippled. Now the British also this is what the complaint is in paragraph 29, attempt to incite the tribes against the colonists, but with little success. In fact, the Indian tribes, as I'd said last week, often fought with the Continental Army, striking into the redcoats' hearts, fear of the red man's bow and his tomahawk. Of course, tomahawk became standard issue for the Americans. They did affect our culture in a lot of ways, and have in more ways than we understand, and a lot of it for the good. We have learned a lot of good things from the American red man while we were at odds with him. And they did fight with us in the Revolution. But there were certain tribes that did, and you can read the history on that, and some that didn't. And part of the reason that they did, they saw which tribes, the tribes that helped the Continental soldiers, the Americans, they saw what tribes were joining the British, and it was their enemies that they had been at warfare with for a few centuries, and so they were glad to join the Americans. Now, the British had provided to them, and the French in Canada had provided rifles. They had done that with an idea of them using the rifles. Of course, we call it the French and Indian War because the red man confederated most of the tribes, not all of them, but confederated against the British and Americans. So as all war, it's a mess, and you don't know who your friends are and who are your enemies in many cases. But the British had more success in inciting the insurrection of colonists against colonists. They did anything they could. They pulled out all the corks. They wanted to wipe out the Americans if they had to. They wanted this continent really bad, and I don't blame them for that. But they went about it all wrong, and they ended up losing everything in the final analysis. And the odd thing about it all, the French were inciting the red man against the American colonists during the French and Indian War, and then the French joined the Americans. And politics, of course, war is a political activity. It's the final outworking of the enforcement of a political position. And it does, as is always said, it makes strange bedfellows. Not that the people in America liked the French that much, but when they saw that the French were willing to help them, had a common enemy, they put up with it. So there we go. That's what happens. The confusion of it all. Well, paragraphs 3 through 29 list criminal charges against King George and co-conspirators. We're at paragraph 29. I'm just summing up. And they showed through these paragraphs that he is unfit for office, justifying the colonies breaking off from Britain. Well, let's go to paragraph 30. We're getting toward the end here. It's been a long time. Paragraph 30 says this. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress against, in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be a ruler of a free people. Our declaration in this paragraph 30 is summing up Congress's petitions and resolutions, the American Congress's petitions and resolutions, which add life's color to its snapshots. Colonial Assembly's discussion of common grievances produce humble and reasonable petitions to King and Parliament for redress of grievances. Grievances, ought to drop a footnote and define the word redress. It's a French-Norman word. William the Conqueror brought it to England. It's part of the English language now. We use it, of course, redress. But I've noticed when I was going to school, I remember people used to talk about redress of grievances. We learned about it even in grade school. I heard that word. And dress, right, dress. I learned that later. Dress, right, dress. Very important in the military context. But redress, dress is an old French word. It means to straighten up, to line up. And redress, or a redress of grievances, is to straighten out complaints, straighten out the problem. That's what it really means at bottom. And that's what the American colonies were asking, and they asked many times. They wrote many letters. The colonies submitted to the common law's requirements of what our common law calls diffidiatio. And I usually mispronounce that word. That's a common law doctrine. It was somehow the Latin stuck, because back in the early days, the only people that could write and read were the people that could write and read Latin, because that was the only language that allowed. And that's a Latin word. It only allowed to the people that learned to read and write, I should say. Diffidiatio. And what diffidiatio said is that in a common law country such as England, and the American colonies were under that law, that the prince, the sovereign, just the king in old Anglo-Saxon England, the king, he had a duty toward the people who were under his authority. Now, usually his authority only had authority in a military context. If war or invasion was imminent, then the elders would get together and make a formal grant of military powers, which are extraordinary powers, unusual powers, not compatible with our common law. These are the law of the city, the law of Rome. Matter of fact, the law of the city, the civil law of Rome, arose out of the law of the Roman militia, which became the Roman Legion. We're going back a long time here. Matter of fact, back to 753, the year 753 BC, when Rome, two brothers, first founded Rome, and there were about 300 families, nomadic and farming families, around what were the ruins of a city called Saturnia, upon which Rome was built. But this military law is given to the king at common law, and it's a special jurisdiction as commander-in-chief. That's where our president, by the way, he answers to the idea of a common law king. What is a common law king? It's a king that's not a kingship that's not hereditary. It's very limited, as our Constitution limits the presidency. Governors of our states are common law offices. Same office as a king. The only difference is we use Latin terms. President's a Latin word. Governor's a Latin word. But they wanted to get rid of the idea of king because, when we set our Constitution up, because the word king didn't smack well with Americans, because they began to identify it with that imperial cult, the emperor type thing, because he called himself emperor here in the colonies. He didn't do that in England. That's what he says he was here in the colonies. And he said the common law didn't apply, and he was emperor here. Well, the British, when the Americans would make a plea for peace, the British would return injury for kindness. Injury for kindness. And by this, the colonies continued to obey right and duty. But when the British told them they didn't have any rights and duties, they said that's a violation of the common law doctrine of diffidiatio. Diffidiatio says the king, when he's put in office, when he's given power, no matter what the situation is, especially in a military context, the king is required to provide his services in an effort to protect the people that are under his authority, under his protection in case of war. Well, what that means is, of course, that the militia of the, in the case of America, the 12 separate states, several states, as our Constitution says, the militia then is to lend its service to the defense of the land, and the king is to lead the militia in that defense, in that strategy, and military strategy to defend the land. It's all about the land, the law of the land, the law that they were also to defend, because to defend the law of the land is to defend the land itself. And to defend the land is to defend that law that pertains and arises out of the land. They were very sensible in what they understood. It would be to our Creator that we would try to understand our common law. It's a fundamental thing, and it is also a religious activity. Our common law is decidedly, unambiguously, without question, a Christian law. Its principles, its first principles, are Christian principles, right down to our bankruptcy laws, which were fashioned after the Old Testament, the year of Jubilee. All of our common laws that way, all of our separation of power doctrine, our jury, those are all part of the revelation of God, written and unwritten, in the nature of things. That's what we're not paying attention to. If these things, when we talk about our Constitution of the United States, if it isn't ultimate law, what's the use of paying any attention to it? If it doesn't espouse first principles that are true to our to creation, the laws of creation, which are the laws of the Creator, what's the use of even paying any attention? Do we believe that it has the first principles that merit our attention and our obedience to these laws? And I believe they do, because I can compare this document called the Declaration of 76 and the Constitution of the United States. I can take those principles and I can lay them beside the principles that God has revealed in writing over a few centuries, quite a few centuries. And I can see that they track fundamentally the same. They are not fundamentally contrary. The ultimate rule is the revelation of God's will in the Bible. That's the ultimate rule. And if you don't have good reasons for believing that, there's no reason to believe that either, by the way. If you really don't know why the Bible is true and how you can know it's true, what's the use? Well, the same thing is true of the Constitution, but it all comes back to the laws of nature and the Declaration of 76. It all comes back to the laws of nature, unwritten, and the nature of things meant to be observed, sometimes written down, recorded, so we understand what we've been thinking. That's what our Constitution and our Declaration of 76 do. The laws of nature, unwritten in the nature of things, and secondly, the laws of nature is God, written in the Bible. Those two phrases taken out, lifted from the Declaration of 76. These are the observations of the two volumes of God's revelation of his will to man. Well, coming back to getting close to 31 here, watching myself a little on time, the king was limited. And what had happened, and to quote Tom Jefferson on this, he said, Christianity is the greatest of religions. It's the only religion where men have tolerance one of another. As long as it is not clothed, he says, in the rags of priestcraft. And wherever you see the priest, said Tom Jefferson, you will see him attempt and be wedded. He'll push to be wedded to government. And that's what destroys the fundamental beauty, he said, of the doctrine of Jesus Christ. Now, that's the way our country found it. A while ago, Girard said that Obama said this is no longer a Christian nation. And Girard said that's an acknowledgement that this was a Christian nation. Well, that made good sense. And it is. And there's no question, and he admitted it. Our nation was, by critical mass, no question, without debate, unambiguously Christian when these documents were written. So much so that this has been the big push to try to get rid of it. And his ilk wants to get rid of that. If they get rid of that, if Christianity does not have a critical mass of sway among people, don't think I'm foolish enough to believe that everybody's going to be Christian, everybody's going to go to church every Sunday. That'll has never happened until the Savior returns. It's not has not happened. It will not happen now. But still, the unchristian man and woman are weak. All men are weak. Christian men are weak. They're even weaker. And they will go along with the sway of the crowd. And if the sway of the crowd is Christian, they'll go along with it. That's fact. That's history, too. It always happens that way. That's what was going on when this document was written. The sway of the crowd, even if they weren't Christians, such as Tom Paine. Tom Paine wrote Common Sense, the most influential document that moved the colonies to war. He was decidedly not Christian. He hated Christianity. He was a hateful man. So hated that nobody even came to his funeral when he died. He was pagan to the core. He hated Christianity, but he went along with it because he was going to go with the crowd. And the crowd in America was Christian, and so he wrote his pamphlet, Common Sense. And he used the Bible, which he knew very well, by the way. Even the devil knows the Bible better than any of us, and he uses it constantly. Well, Tom Paine used it in a good way, fortunately, and he tried to persuade the American colonists from the Bible, primarily from the Old Testament. He did a fabulous job. It's worth reading if you like the Bible. He did a fabulous job of showing them from the Bible that God doesn't intend for men to have the kind of king that George was trying to be here in America, which means emperor, imperator, commander, the law. He was the law, he said to the colonies. Well, our Declaration of 76 provides a standard whereby we can recognize a tyrant, listing acts which may define a tyrant. Whether wearing the clothes of kings or priests or presidents or senators or congressmen. And once a tyrant is recognized, one's duty arises to follow the course of the common law in separating oneself from those people. And this doctrine called Diffi Diatio says that if the king has breached his agreement, his understanding with us, and he no longer will do his duty as the leader of the militia and start trying to destroy the militiamen and trying to destroy his family and trying to destroy his children and burn his towns and incite insurrection among us, as the complaint says here, we just read it a minute ago. Insurrection, has that been going on? You bet it has for a long time, a number of decades now. Insurrection among us. I remember I looked forward to watching the nightly news when I was growing up. Just to watch the cops bust heads, you know, insurrection everywhere, burning down college campuses. That stuff just didn't happen. All those kids didn't get together and decide to do that. We know now who incited them to it. I mean, I know anyway. I'm older. I read a few books on the subject. And that's all happening now. It doesn't stop happening. The evil empire, the law of the city wants to destroy us. Well, got a few more minutes. I'll start the last. Well, this is paragraph 31. And paragraph 31 is the next to the last. Let's try that one. See what we can knock down the first time through. I'll just read it. This is rather long, paragraph 31, compared to the others. He says, nor have we been wanting in our attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them, says our declaration. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity. We have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and consanguinity. That's a beautiful sentence because he uses it to sum up, and he does a really good job of hitting it hard and fast, sum up everything before in that paragraph. I'm going to read it again. It's the one that's memorable. People remember this sentence. They have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. What's consanguinity? Common blood. Con means with. Sanguis means blood. Yeah, not big, fat Latin word. But consanguinity says up here, our British brethren, you see. We have appealed to their native justice. The ties of our common kindred. We're kinfolk. And he says, consanguinity, we must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. This is rich, because he's not saying, we want to slaughter you, we hate you. No, he's saying we're kin. And I know plenty of people who are kin that do this very thing. I'm talking about kin. We're talking about brothers. We're talking about parents and children. You know, Jesus Christ said, I did not come to bring a sword. I came and to separate mothers and fathers and immediate family members. Jesus Christ said that. I've seen it plenty of times. It's not that when children become Christian folk and their parents make fun of them. I've seen that. I've also seen parents become Christian folk and their children make fun of them and never talk to them for the rest of their lives. And there are all sorts of combinations like that. But in those cases, it's the duty of the person that has taken up Christianity to always, no matter what, honor the other fellow. Doesn't mean you have to be bosom buddies with him anymore. That might not work. How can you walk together unless you agree, says the Bible? You can't. But that doesn't mean you don't have respect for the other fellow because he's your kinfolk. You still have that common tie of culture, of country, of land, or of blood, or of all three, or a combination of those. All of us here in America are on the same parcel of real estate. And if we love this land, and it comes back to the land, I keep saying, that's what holds men together, really. All this political hype and singing, we shall overcome, that's hype. If it doesn't come back to the land, it will not last. And that's what held people together when our country started. Well, this is a beautiful piece of work. Tom Jefferson said, of course, he is the chief drafter of this, and he said he wanted it on his tombstone when they asked him all the things he had done. He said, my greatest achievement is the drafting of this document called the Declaration of 76. And the fundamental principles here go beyond just the political, way beyond the politics. Matter of fact, it goes clear beyond the politics of it and gets down to the bottom of where life really is and says, we're kinfolk, and you folk are treating us like we're animals. We have no choice but to separate. And he says, in peace, we'll be friends, in peace. But in war, we'll be enemies, and we were. And people that fought, it split families up. Some had to go to Canada. Some went to Bermuda. Some stayed here. The worst kind of fights, as any police officer knows, is a family fight. Police officers get hurt and killed answering family squabbles at the house as much more than anything else. How do I know that? Well, police officers tell me, not that I've ever been involved in law enforcement like that, but they tell me that, and I've heard it over and over again, and I think I believe it because I see what families are. That's what happened in the American Revolution. Revolution, that's not a good word. Revolving violence, but that's not what happened. We were attempting return to law, and Britain was being lawless. Well, I think that's enough. Gerard, back to you if you're still there. Thank you very much for allowing me to say a few words. And Gerard is there, but he has to get hooked back up.
Thank you, Brent.
Yeah.
That was good. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to go into the queue now. We have a couple of people there. Looks like Felicia is first on the line here.
Hello.
Hey, Felicia.
How are you? First, I want to say, Mr. Brent, I'm sorry, but I would actually mow some grass and season it with salt and pepper and flour before I eat another human being. But I'm going to send a money order because I don't think that my card has been charged for the donation for a while.
Hey, Felicia? Got a lot of noise in the background. I have a real hard time hearing you. There's like a fan running or something. I'm buzzing.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Oh,
yes,
so much better. Thank you. So start over because I almost got none of what you said, Ron.
Mr. Brent, I'm sorry, but I will mow me some grass and season it with salt and pepper and throw it in some flour and eat it before I become a cannibal. It's not going to happen.
Well, I was hoping you'd think that.
Can't do it. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't think anything has been done about, because I switched my cards, and I know I was getting donations, and I don't think anything has been done about that, so I'm just going to send money orders. Is that okay? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but that's Gerard's question to answer, and something must have happened to him.
This Mr. Brent? Yeah, I'm not easy. No, thank you.
Yeah, I can't answer that question because I'm not involved in that part in doing that.
I know they're doing that kind of stuff, but no thanks. You never know what they're feeding us because they're genetically modifying a lot of stuff too. So you got to just be careful.
Gerard, did you make it back? Pardon?
I'm here. Yeah.
Oh, she had a question for you that I couldn't answer, so I deferred.
Go ahead and repeat it, Felicia, because I didn't get it.
I know payments were supposed to be taken off of my card for donations every month, and I switched cards, and I don't think it's been taken out. So is it okay if I just send money order?
Yeah, that's fine. Yep. If you just send it in, I don't know what happened there, but... usually we have Carl look at that if there's a problem. But
he called me and he said he called me months ago, but I don't think it was fixed. So I'm just going to send money orders.
Well, we appreciate that. Money orders, fine. There's an address there to send it to in the back and on the donation page. Now, Felicia, you were expecting a call. I wanted to talk to John about you. You know, we were going to call you and Crystal. I know they got your house and that. We were talking about what the next step was. You know, Crystal has a lot of people that she has support with. You have to be careful.
What do you mean?
Well, let's say you go into the court and you decide you're going to sue the judge or sue this guy or sue that guy. They get ugly on you. If you're going in there alone, you know, you have to do these things safely. You don't want to put yourself in a position where they can retaliate. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, when Crystal goes to court, she's got a bunch of other people that go with her. And so she can do more than you can as far as filing papers because they're going to be more careful about directly attacking her is what I'm telling you. But we'll talk more offline about that. I mean, I don't know all the particulars about how they took your place, but I do know that they violated your due process because they violate everybody's due process. What the next step to do there, we'll have to discuss that. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
And hopefully with this case we're doing, like John explained, if we can get past the fact of them shoving the statutes down our throat and the very statutes that took your house to begin with, which violated your due process, that's what we're about here, and that's what we're fighting. And so, you know, in the long run, we're going to end up in the same place every time. When you get into the court and you hit that brick wall, you're going to hit the same brick wall we're going to hit. So it's better that we go in and we start chopping on that wall. We're 6,000 members plus. You know, and we get out to people. We're going weekly on shows. Look, your papers are in there. Your place is preserved. And whatever happens, happens. But at least you're on the front of the line for when relief comes. That's my belief. That, you know, you want to put your affidavits in. You want to put your case in because you're documenting the wrong that they did to you. Just like Brent was saying with the colonists. They sent letters, they pleaded, they remonstrated, they did all kinds of stuff before they decided to come to blows, so to speak. Well, that's what we're doing. We've been in there, you know, time and time again. And so we're showing that we're exhausting all our remedies, you know, on the lower end. so that we have to keep going higher and we keep have to pushing until we get that special prosecutor, whatever it is that they're going to decide to do to fix it. So just keep your chin up, and I know you do. I know you're tough. Everybody should be as brave and as tenacious as you. That's all I can say. But, you know, I think things are coming to a head sooner rather than later. It looks like things are starting to move now. So hopefully there'll be light at the end of that tunnel.
Yeah, well, that light needs to come sooner because the position that I'm in, I really don't like it. And, I mean, you know, I sent the documents and of your no signature that we talked about on the last conference mm-hmm. call. And it's like, really? There's no signature. You whited it out.
Someday you're going to be able to take those people with their no signature and you're going to be able to hold them personally responsible.
Well,
but right now,
as soon as possible.
Yes. Well, look at I know you're not afraid
back,
to do it.
They're sitting back and they're probably living in a nice house and they're getting paid all this money, you know, and getting paid off a lot of non-judicial foreclosures. And then there's people that's homeless on the street, like me, like I'm one of them, and they're just living their life like nothing is going to happen.
Well, the sad thing is those people that took your house, the people that facilitated taking your house, they all got a piece of that. Don't you think they didn't? Listen, they're all getting paid off. They're all on the take. That's what we're here for, and hopefully that's what we're going to be able to do. So, you know, as soon ASAP, and look at you're in the front of the line. I don't care. You know what I mean? You got your paperwork in. And, I mean, there is some steps that you're going to have to take, but right now, timing is everything. When we get this Supreme Court thing back or not, that's going to determine what our next step is, which basically is going to determine what your next step is, really. You know what I mean?
I want to file it on a federal level here in Orlando, Florida, at the federal court downtown.
Right.
Because that local court isn't doing anything.
Look, we're in the federal court now. We took the state into the federal. So whatever obstacles we come with up there are going to be the same obstacles that you're going to deal with unless we can knock those walls down before you get there is my point. You know what I mean?
Yes,
because they're operating from top to bottom in this country. We had no idea that it was this bad when we first came in here. We were hoping that there would be a judge that understood the Constitution. My goodness, you have how many federal judges throughout the system? Hundreds and hundreds of judges. But you know, one thing we've discovered is we get the same response no matter where we go. They really got this system locked down. They've really brainwashed these people. Now, some of them are actually evil, but some of them are just useful idiots, Felicia. They're just doing what they're used to doing, and they're not doing it vindictively. But, you know, look, the pot is sweetened. They get some money for it. And so when you're in that kind of a situation, sometimes you're able to not overlook stuff because in the back of your mind you understand that that's where your bread and butter's coming from. And there was a show like that where there was a corrupt cop. And John likes to quote it, and he didn't even realize what a criminal he was until the very end, until things got very bad, and he realized that he was a bigger criminal than the guys he was busting. So that's what happens with people. They lose their conscience, and they make excuses. And what's happening today is the light is coming on, and you know every person that makes a grievance. What did our forefathers say? They said the truth will prevail as long as somebody is willing to proclaim it. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're proclaiming the truth. We're calling them out on their crimes. And there will be redress. There will be. And I mean, it's up to us to persevere. And God knows you have certainly persevered. And all I can tell you is just wait a little longer. Even with your federal court suit, I think you should wait to see what happens with us because we're in the federal court, and our battle is your battle. And so you don't no sense in reinventing the wheel. Just wait and see what they do with this paper, and we'll come to some kind of conclusion there so that we can better advise our people, you included, as to what the next step should be, because that's where we're at. We're really, you know, it's like a mechanic trying to take an engine apart and figure out what's wrong with it. That's what we're doing. We're disassembling this thing. We're getting down in it, and we're doing exploratory surgery to see where we can fix, how and where we can fix this problem that we have. And we want to do it without blowing the motor up, you know what I mean?
Right. It's been a year, and since then, even though I've submitted all those documents and submitted them to the sheriff's office, and they still put me out. And they follow everything on that paperwork that I received. They follow every step, and it's like, wow, they really did this.
Yep, because they think that that's the thing to do. They think they're right. They really do.
Well, I'm holding everybody accountable, even the sheriff that was at my house. I got their badge numbers and everything. I have the video of them at my front door as I passed by. Even the sheriff himself was there. So I'm holding everybody accountable.
Look, the most ignorant people in this are the sheriffs, because they don't understand that this thing, when it comes down, is going to come down on their heads first, because ultimately they're doing their will under color of law. And they're the guy that's out there in the street. And so you know what? Who's gonna get smacked first? It's gonna be the foot soldiers that facilitate this thing. Unfortunately, yep, for him, because he's the one that did it. Look at, you gave him paperwork. You put him on notice, and he ignored it. So
I'll get a certified letter at that.
What do they always like to say to us, Felicia? Ignorance of the law is no excuse. Well, guess what? When you send him that notice, he can no longer feign ignorance, can he?
Well, that same sheriff is asking for a $9.4 million budget for increase to pay officers and other stuff. And that's my money.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The way I look at it.
Yep. No, you're right. So hang in there, and let's see what happens with this paper before you file it in the federal court. I mean, I'm not saying don't file it in the federal court, but I think you should wait to see where we go before you go in there, because maybe we'll have something a little better.
Yeah, I want to be well prepared, so, you know,
exactly.
I got to be well prepared.
You want to do it right the first time. You don't want to have to fix it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
So we are figuring things out. We are figuring it as we go. You know what I mean? We weren't sure what kind of evil we were going to run into, and boy, have we've lifted the top of the cesspool up, and boy, it stinks is all I can tell you. But look, we're going to put the gloves on and the mask on. We're going to keep digging, okay?
Yes, sir. And one last thing before I stand mute. You know, I was in the police academy back in the 90s, and the main thing they taught us, I mean, they instilled in us, was integrity. And it seems like none of these officers have it anymore.
Yeah, it's a shame. It really is.
It
a
is.
Shame.
They're just following the system.
I mean, look, there are some good ones that protect.
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones. I know them.
That's right.
And there's a lot
right.
of bad ones. And
that's
the bad ones
right.
make the good ones look bad.
That's right. And it doesn't take very many bad ones to, you know, a bad apple spreads through the whole bunch. You know, it makes the whole bunch look bad, you know?
Yes, sir. There's a lot of good ones. I know a lot of good ones. So,
no,
and
there are.
Bad
I feel bad for them, because they're in a system that hobbles them from doing the right thing.
Yeah.
They don't get ahead by doing the right thing. They get behind, you know?
Yes, but in the end, they have a moral obligation to do what's right, and karma is something.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I'll stand mute. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Have a good night. God bless you. Okay, next question. We got somebody, I don't know, no name. It's 267 area code, baby. Give us your first
Hello.
Name in the state. Yes. Who's this? Just your first name.
This is Florence Mesa.
How you
can
doing?
You hear me?
I can.
How are you? I'm not sure as to who I'm speaking to. I had sent information into John and Jan about my situation, and if you look on the site, I explained things about my situation as well, that myself and my children were victimized of a strong-arm addiction, and we were forced out of our home under underneath barrels of gun by the police officer because a white woman claimed that we were illegally taking our home, even though that I have court orders and other things saying that I had every right to be there. The police department put all of my children in handcuffs, and my children was 13, 14. My 14-year-old was autistic, and they told punch the 13-year-old on his stomach and said that they was going to fight him as if he was a stranger on the street. And because of the fact that I whistle blew on the decrepit people, so-called landlord, that they, along with my ex-husband, was milking the Section 8 housing voucher program to be able to pass inspections when the house was failing. Come to find out, because I had been fighting the system and the city of Philadelphia for years of them illegally taking my children and giving them to my ex-husband so that I could pay him child support, I had been put through the prison system. I had been deemed psychologically crazy by the state. Went through six mental health evaluations, forced court psychic evaluation, and then finally found guilty by having jurors that was from family members of the police department, clerk's office, and after the court told a so-called hand-picked attorney that if he said it was my attorney one more time, that he was going to throw him in jail. And the court put me in jail over two failures of peer that was removed from the record 2 years prior to after they had me go through a criminal proceeding for 6 years. And the judge told the so-called force court attorney that I found out they used to work for the DA's office, which right now the DA that was involved in my case has been put in jail for case fixing. And I'm trying to figure out why is there nobody trying to help or jump on the bandwagon, so-called gurus and civil rights activists and everything else to help me and my family out. We've been made homeless for over 6 years. We have nobody.
What's your first name?
Florence Mason.
Florence.
Yes, that's okay. My first and last name.
Well, let me tell you something. Stephen King couldn't have wrote a more frightful horror story than you're just telling.
Really?
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It takes the cake. Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
people
like
told
you said,
me.
Where's all the civil rights people, the ACLU, all of them, the whole bunch
all
of them.
None of them wouldn't do anything. I wrote to every one of them. I actually, for a pro se litigant, I had the first ever in the city of Philadelphia pro se litigant default judgment against the state and these people. Do you know I have evidence that the judge and the clerk took and falsified a document and altered the court stamp to make it look like this woman filed the answer to my civil rights complaint that never was?
Well, I hate to say nothing surprises me, but it does. You know what I mean? It's like,
no, I'm pretty sure it doesn't. It shouldn't. I mean, you know, I heard you, the other lady who just got off the phone, her name was Miss Felicia, I think it was.
Yep.
She was saying, you know, that there's some good cops and things like that. Well, I understand that, but I don't. Here's the thing. If you're supposed to be a good cop and you sit there and allow 30 things to happen just because you don't get your, you know, if you do say anything, you won't get your promotion, there's nothing good about you. Because, like you said, you know, how do they say, you know, good bad things happen because good people stand around and don't do nothing. The reason why we're in this calamity is for years and years, people who call themselves good, say the citizens or this, that, and the other, don't do shit, excuse my language, but I mean it, don't do shit when it comes down to time to get involved. You know, people have told me because of the fact that my children were not killed in this situation, why should they help me? So when they say it's take the community to raise a child, I said it takes the community to mind their damn business. Because
so that's the measuring stick. Your children weren't killed, so we can't help you. Who
yes.
needs help after your child is killed? Who needs help?
That's the only way black people can, most black people can get help. If their children, like Tayvon Martin, all of those other people, just stay in the third, that's why we're in the 21st century or in the year 2018, black people's hands still look like guns. You tell me how the hell that happened and what black person's hand looked like a Smith & Wesson to me or anybody else. We let people go to jail for killing the police officer when we have never looked in the situation, because the law says specifically there are laws and procedures out there that if a police officer illegally makes a false arrest or is belligerent or abusive to an individual that he comes in contact with, that person has the right to defend themselves to the death of that officer. But yet we got people going to jail.
They don't want to admit that. They don't like to. They don't like to hear that. I'll tell you that right
now.
Yeah,
but I know they don't like to hear it.
Right.
But I don't care. But that's the law. That's the law and the rule. And you also said, but we let them get away with it every day. And we sit up there, and I get so sick of people watching this stupid behind Judge Judy, her attitude, and letting her sit there, and every judge in the city and everywhere else is sitting up there trying to emulate her. Oh, you ain't gonna play with me today. I had enough. This, that, and the third. We need to start shutting them down and making them look like the fools that they are. That's just as simple as that.
I agree.
And take them right out of there. Because I'm not sitting there, those women and every damn thing else, they can put on their skirts, pants, whatever, like I do. And I don't pretend that nobody's no God. But I tell you, I've been fighting for me and my children for over, since 2011, this is when this situation happened. I had discovered that the Philadelphia Housing Authority held that housing voucher and has been receiving money off of me and my children back since that time that we was illegally put out. And they told them that they was withholding my the voucher because the fact that DHS told them that they removed my children from me whatever time. But if you look at the Law Against the Violence Against Women Act, it says that the housing authorities in every city there is get over $99 million to protect women with abuse order, and that they're supposed to bifurcate the lease to make women whose names are not on the lease or the project, whatever, so they will not be illegally removed from their home and everything and things of that nature. All of my children was on those housing vouchers and whatever, and all of my children got beat down. Matter of fact, my oldest child my third oldest was, I think, not even 19 at the time, 18 or 19. They took and hog-tied her. Like she was a dog in the street, not even a dog. A pig would get better treatment than what they did to her. They hog-tied her. They kneed her in the back while I was at the courthouse and kicked her in the back so she would drop the phone and not tell me what was going on there, and so that I could not put it in my complaint while I was at the Commonwealth. Because I found out that this secret Commonwealth was hidden in one of those offices in Philadelphia, they removed the Commonwealth office out of Philadelphia back into office in Pittsburgh where nobody can get to.
Well, that's a horrible story. And you know, you got a whole lot ahead of you. I mean, you know, well, it's behind you now.
It's not behind me, because here's the thing. I'm a victim. I'm a wrongfully accused and wrongful convicted felon. I'm now a felon under the so-called burglary of my own property, which I had four court orders that said I had a right to be there. I filed bankruptcy. I did a bankruptcy case and everything else. Now, the fact of it is that after I filed all these things last year, the judge who fixed my case and tried to do all those things, which the city tried to get a judgment against me in the city of Philadelphia, I did RICO charges, all of those. I had RICO case, the first ever one that stood, and all those different things. But yet, they did nothing, and I still can't get nothing. But the judge in this case called Dawn A. Stanley, if you look her up, she has been barred from being a judge ever again in the city of Philadelphia and anywhere else in the United States for case fixing. Okay?
Well, it sounds to me like you have all kinds of standing for a suit. I mean, I can't believe that there's no group out there that you could send a transcript to or a recording of what happened that they wouldn't
reach
out.
Can you get us transcripts and maybe a very
to Jan and John. If y'all look up my name, punch my name in Google, Florence Mason, you'll see so-called Occupy Philadelphia.
Okay, this is what I want you to do. If you've already said it, fine, but if you haven't, get this together. The story that you just told, I was listening, and if you can get all of that in with those details and name names into an affidavit and any transcript you think might be helpful to that affidavit and get it to us, then we can use that in the court case going up against the judiciary as again, more proof, you know. Anybody who has been thrown out of court under Rule 12, okay, they also should do an affidavit and send it in to us. But we need to know before you send it in because I get so much stuff. I can't read these cases, and if I don't know what they're about, they don't get
right.
But I have to know that there's a purpose for it coming here and that we can put it into our court case as proof, okay?
Okay. Well, here's I'm going to tell you, I don't know who I'm speaking to, if that's John or Jan.
This is John.
Hi, John. I'm sorry. How are you? I sent you guys information, but when I signed up for your site as a member, I put a lot of those information on that, I guess, in my bio or whatever you would say about a description of me in there. And I just sent you and Jan information.
When did you send it?
I would say look towards the end of May and the beginning of June. No, it had to be May. I know it was the end of May when I sent it to John. I mean, to you and Jan.
I'll look around. You see, I get a lot of stuff, and there's no way I can read everything that comes. It's this way. But if I know that I could look for it, or if Jan's got it and he has a copy, I'll have to go through my office and see if I still have it and what I do have.
I can tell
you know?
My email is sarahsmile1930@gmail.com.
Okay. Did you do an affidavit with that, too?
I have lots of affidavits in my cases. I just haven't done one recently.
Yeah, but you just told the story that the way you told that story, and any more flavor you can kind of throw in there would be fine. But the way you told that story is perfect. It's right to the point. You laid out all of the crimes, all of the things that had taken place, all of the injustices in the courts, and everything. So if you do that in an affidavit form, that would be huge. And, you know, what we need is mostly the affidavit. Now, if you can get some court documents that might help, that's fine. But when we say court documents, I mean, for instance, transcripts. If you get transcripts that might help, that's fine. But
the
affidavit should stand on its own.
I have the affidavit. Those were I actually have it, and things that all of that is in the couple emails I sent you was quite a bit because I wrote the affidavit to the Department of HUD. I named all of their agents that had received information and wiped
it
all
down
under the table. Yes, I sent it to you guys by email.
What was it? PDFs.
The transcripts and some of the documents that I filed, those are PDFs, yes.
Okay.
See, I don't know if you have an affidavit that's like what you just told tonight.
Right, that's the story we
if
want.
If you could.
No, it is in that. It is
in
that.
I know
that
you got a lot of names and stuff, but you didn't give them all tonight, and that's fine. You know, what you want to do is you want to have that summary like you just gave. And I mean, look, you can expand upon everything else later, but the main thing is to tell the
name of the court, the name of the
tonight.
Judge, the The name of the court, the name of the judge, and any lawyer in that courtroom, that kind of stuff. If you have the names of the cops that abused your daughter, or any of
those
this stuff,
are all.
That's what.
This is
want.
What I'm trying to let you guys know. I hear y'all and I understand you. That's been done. And on the cover sheet of my email, on the site that I filed with you guys, it lists all the names of the cops that did it, the districts and everything else. The emails that I just sent to you and to Jan and John has that list of the court cases. It has the attorneys that was involved in it, and actually what happened.
Here's the problem we have. You know, we can't take the whole court case. We can't take something that we got to go through and piece together. You have to stitch it together for us and give us exactly what we need. And that, because again, what you just spoke about tonight, if that could go into, if you've got that in an affidavit, or you've got a lot of it and you want to add to it and then get one good affidavit, that would suffice. As a matter of fact, I would say don't even worry about the transcripts at this point, because an affidavit unrebutted is it rules the
is
court.
The rule
and
of
we
court,
will
yes.
we will bring it into the court and as evidence. Okay.
Okay.
And we'll also make
the
point that
we're
looking for justice in all these cases plus, okay?
Exactly. So. Well, that's the thing. I have to, like I was trying to tell you, I'm looking for a way and a group of people to help me clear my name. Okay, like I said, I'm down as a convicted criminal.
We'll put that
criminal.
Together and we will help. And anybody else listening, if you have a story like this and you can put it in an affidavit and let us know that you're going to send it before you send it. Because, again, if I'm not looking for it, and email is a nice way to send it in a PDF or faxing it. Our fax number is up on the site under the donation tab. And also our email, the best email to send it to is mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, because when you send it to that, numerous people get it. So a lot of people will get it. And if I miss it, then someone else will pick up on it and could get it to me. But again, anybody that's going to give us an affidavit on a story similar, you know, a story that really is a powerful story like this one that clearly shows the injustices of the court, these are the kind of cases we really would like to stick into our case as evidence.
Okay. Well, I will get that to you guys. I'll make sure that that happens between tonight and tomorrow. And I didn't want to knock it out of the time, but I just had to find a way to get back to you, John, because I've been trying to reach you for a while. And the last time I talked and was able to get on was back when you guys did the vote to file the case in New York for the crimes of the people that you guys indicted from the juror. And things of that nature. So I was having problems when you changed the number and things like that to trying to get on. But right now
it's very difficult to get a hold of me. I agree. I ignore a lot of phone calls. And I can't read all my mail, and I certainly can't read all of my snail mail that comes in. I can't read it all. As a matter of fact, I got two or three letters that came in recently from people imprisoned, and I'm going to get that out to Jan, and Jan will get it out to other people that might be able to answer these people. I mean, I certainly don't have the time to answer them. And, you know, the shame is we really can't help them at this point. We'd love to do maybe habeas corpuses. They won't be honored in most cases. Occasionally they do get, but it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably won't be honored. But to get the affidavit in, I mean, the habeas corpus in would be really nice. And then to be able to use that in the court case as proof, again, and again, one of the most important things is anybody that goes in to file a lawsuit and you're going up against the government or an agency or something and you find that you get thrown out under Rule 12, we want affidavits on that. That's extremely important.
Oh, okay. Yes, absolutely. Well, I was on the last day, and I'm going to give the floor up and let somebody else talk, but I got hurt physically last year. I had a slip and fall in the supermarket over here in Philadelphia, and I hurt myself pretty bad. So the civil rights case, I had the first one that ever stuck against a police officer, but the judge let this go because the police officer that they were trying to get me to go against was also an African-American police officer. Now, be it though, he did lots of things wrong. He cursed, and matter of fact, with the police officer who had my, the Lieutenant Kopecky, set up there and called my 11-year-old at that time a bitch. And, I mean, he told them to call DHS because this bitch will not shut up. That's what he called the 11-year-old child. And after he told her that, called her that, he proceeded over to my 20-year-old at the time and punched him in the face while he was in handcuffs. And the neighbors watched. And the people watching stood there and did nothing. One neighbor begged and asked, two neighbors actually begged and asked the police to let them go because it was like, well, they're big, but they're still children. We'll sign for them, we'll do this and that, but they was willing to let my other children get caught off. I was able to file documentations to get my children off of the burglary charges and everything else that they were trying to put them under. Now, the case against them has been wiped away. Nobody can find it or anything else. But yet, when they go into courts at different times, they have been trying to use it against them to put them under the jail. But since they could not get a hold of my children and me, they went for me, and they tried to sentence me for 7 years to put me to put me in prison for 7 years after I got myself out of prison 7 different times. And I beat their psychological evaluation 7 different times. So nobody wants to deal with me because they claim that I'm ornery and I'm a bitch and whatever. But I tell them this. They can tell me how much an ornery and a bitch that I am. But they went after my children, and every last one of them is going to have hell to pay because they put their hands on my children. And I'm
to help you start that point again by getting it into our case. And look, at any case that gets into our case, will have to be dealt with, okay? We're not going to be able to deal with every case and try every case that we bring in. But clearly, using this as evidence will be a catapult, a springboard to take it into the courts. And again, you know, look, we know that, Trump has replaced quite a few judges, not enough, nowhere near enough. And hopefully he's going to we want to try to do something and try to get some communications to Trump here that he really should really be using his bully pulpit to really press upon Congress to go after these people, these judges that are in bad behavior. They got to go. We got to get rid of them.
We got to get rid of them. We can't keep sitting on and say, oh, you know, you can't fight. I mean, there are judges still here in Philadelphia that has been disbarred, thrown off the bench, and all of those things that are still being judged in the court when they claim that they're not supposed to be practicing law at no time when they were disbarred.
Well, with that said, the big problem is the bar. But nevertheless,
exactly.
It's interesting that they did disbar them. Look, no judge that is a member of the bar should be a judge. None. No magistrate that's a member of the bar should not be a member of the bar. No prosecutor that is a member of the bar should be a prosecutor because their strings are pulled. They do everything they do is status quo. They're out to protect each other and to protect the status quo, whatever government agency you might be chasing after, trying to get justice, trying to get them to change and do the right thing. They're going to protect them all. They are the minions of the New World Order. So
we need to do something. If Sessions wants to clean up Philadelphia courts, this is a perfect case for him to put a special prosecutor on. I mean, she can't be the only one that they're doing this to. I mean, she's probably the only one that resists the way you do, but nevertheless.
Yes, exactly. Well, there has been four cases just recently. I don't know if you all heard about the case where the two young men that were sitting in the coffee house and the police officer arrested them because they were sitting there and some person called there and complained and said they were doing
something. Not too long ago, like within the past couple of months. I remember seeing it. It was a Starbucks.
Exactly. Well, one of those was my business partner.
Look, Philadelphia needs to be cleaned up, obviously. Look, we got to get somebody else in here. I don't want to push you off, but
sure, no, that's fine.
Make sure you get that affidavit in just the way you told it tonight. I mean, we don't need all the transcripts and everything. You save that stuff if they want to go through it at some point with a fine-tooth comb, that's great. But the story, just the story, like you just told tonight, that's what you need to get on paper. Okay?
Okay. I will do just that. And thank you, guys, and I yield my floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Boy, just when you think you heard it all, we get another one, worse than the other one.
Yeah.
Go ahead. This is I got Terry unmuted from New Jersey.
Hi, guys. I was just wondering if you attach any significance to the fact that these actions were dismissed by magistrate judges, which is actually in violation of their own rules, because magistrate judges are not empowered to make dispositive judgments, you know, meaning that they can't dismiss a case.
Summary judgment. They're not allowed to do it, right?
That's exactly right. That's according to their own rules. I mean, they violate their rules. I know that. But, you know, I mean, don't they even know?
Well, look, not even a judge is permitted to make a decision when you get into a court of record. If it's what they call a criminal case under the common law, okay, if it's a criminal situation, it shouldn't be called a criminal court or a criminal case. You know, it's still a court of record. It's a common law procedure. It may be a criminal action, and clearly that could be the case. But any criminal action, the judge is supposed to stay out of this. The judge is there just for, or the magistrate, and all judges are magistrates, by the way. So any judge can sit in, but then they have to act as a magistrate, which is just to guide things and keep things moving, keep order in the court and keep it moving. But they're not to make decisions. They're not to make rulings. This is not their job to do. This is the job of the jury, okay? Now, also in the case of a civil, what they call a civil case, okay, again, is a common law case, court of record, and we're bringing an action. It's an action. It's not a complaint. It's not a civil complaint or a civil case or anything. It's a common law case. And again, these people are not to make decisions. Now, the only time they're to make decisions, and magistrates cannot make these decisions, magistrates should be sitting in only on common law cases. But if you got an equity case, which is to proceed according to the rules of the common law, okay, and not chancery, as they do follow and go through forward with, but those cases there, once you go in and you take an equity case in and you say, okay, I'm going to, do this in equity, so I'm going to allow the judge to make a decision, so you have some trust in the judge, and you can only do this with just judges. And we ain't got none of them, so you better not do it these days. But hopefully one day we'll get them. But look at it. If you give it over to the judge to make the decision, then they can make the decision at the end of the case. And as the case goes on, they can make all the decisions. And if you don't like them, you got an appellate process. And again, we're hoping to get people who are just. The problem is we're not getting people who are just. Okay? And that's the problem. These people got to go. They got to go. They have to be indicted. They have to be removed from office. They're in bad behavior. And if Congress doesn't do it, the people need to do it. And we will do it. We will indict them. Now, I don't know that we'll get an indictment, but I feel confident telling the story to the grand jury that they will give an indictment. And we will pursue it. But again, this is the problem. And
hey, John,
and you're right. You can't they get these people. Again, if a judge appoints other people to work because the load is heavy. I presume he's got the ability to do that, so he hires some extra people. They're not necessarily appointed. I'm talking on the federal level. And so he appoints a few people. They have to be magistrates. They cannot be judges. They have to be just traffic cops in the court, and they have to be sitting in on common law cases where they make no decision. And so that's absolutely correct. Yeah, John.
Did I don't remember, but maybe we should reiterate the point with these judges that it requires a jury for them to make decisions. I mean, I know we must have said that a couple times.
Well, not in this particular case. Well, actually, we did. We used the word tribunal, and, they may not understand, the proper way, but we do put footnotes, and I don't believe they read anything we put in there.
I don't think they do either, but we need to maybe stress the point that they don't even have a right to make a decision in this case, that we're expecting a jury of the peers of the people of New York.
Oh, you're a sovereign citizen. You got to stop this nonsense. You're a sovereign citizen.
Yeah.
You can't speak no more. We're not listening to you no more because you're a sovereign citizen.
That's why they're calling us sovereigns, because we want the jury to make the decision and not the judge. Oh, imagine that. So
yeah.
they don't want to put that jury there. That's the whole goal of this thing, is to not impanel a jury.
And they've got sovereign immunity.
They're not. Look at even in the cases with these guys out west with the Bundys and the Hammonds and stuff, they know that even with their puppet juries that they can lose, that they lose control, and that the jury rules their heart. They have no control over men's hearts, and they don't want to let it go there, John. They don't even want to take a chance. Even a tainted jury, they don't want to take a chance on. That's that's the long and the short of this.
I got another question for you.
Yeah.
There's an interesting development in New Jersey. Actually, it's not really new, but the people that were appointed to the Judicial Nomination Committee, there's a committee of seven former judges who are on this committee, five of whom were involved in my illegal eviction and the theft of my father's estate at one point. So I had made up a website called jamesazali.blogspot.com. Now, James Azali was a former chairman of the New Jersey Supreme Court. And one of the things I was wondering is, for example, at one point we filed a petition. Now, they didn't accept it, and that had to do with regarding my illegal or unlawful eviction. Because the judge didn't have jurisdiction, because New Jersey, like a lot of states, says that you can't evict somebody unless they are in violation of, like, one of the tenets of the Anti-Eviction Act. Now, this judge took it upon herself to evict me, even though I wasn't in violation of the Anti-Eviction Act, but she was, because they said that according to the Anti-Eviction Act, in order to for a judge to obtain jurisdiction, a reason for their eviction outlined or in the Anti-Eviction Act must be made. So I was wondering, now, even though a Supreme Court doesn't have to hear every case, I'm wondering, are they obligated to discipline or take some kind of action against a rogue judge?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's their job, and they're not doing it. And that's why we sent a mandamus to them on that very, very subject. And we're waiting to hear from them. And if we have to, we need to consider, and we need to alert them. We're going to give them a couple of notices. We need to alert them. But we're going to consider an indictment, even for the United States Supreme Court judges. How dare they not do their job? Okay? And Congress, it's like talking to the wall with those people. But anyway, that's their job. The other courts are inferior to the only one United States Supreme Court. And their ruling, when they get word from somebody down below, because these people are frustrated, they're not getting anywhere, and they get word that these judges are doing what they're doing, they have a duty to step up and do something. And, you know, by doing it here and doing it there, it wouldn't have to be done too often, would it? Because they would set what they want. They want precedence. Well, they need to give them precedence then. Give them precedence. You know? But anyway, you're right.
Well, I appreciate it. And the interesting thing is that five of these seven nominees have their fingerprints on my cases, because every time I got shut down by the lower courts, I would file a petition with the Supreme Court. At one point, I filed a civil rights lawsuit with the federal district court, which was dismissed. The judge actually made up his own facts in the case in order to dismiss it. And I filed another petition with the United States Supreme Court. Of course, you know, they didn't bother to do anything with it. But it's a very well-documented conspiracy. And you're right about these judges. I mean, how, you know, you got seven nominees and five of them, you know, are involved in a criminal conspiracy. So I'm going to try to publicize that as best I can. I've already started to do it with these blogs. So Anyway, I yield. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay. We're on a roll here tonight. And then we have the one, the only Crystal Matt coming up. Crystal, are you there? Hopefully we didn't put you to sleep.
Waiting. Crystal!
Oh boy.
I know, it gets to be after 10:30.
Crystal can't make it. I'm going to go ahead and open up Cynthia. I'll leave Crystal open in case she hears us.
Yeah, it's hard to hear you, Gerard.
Okay, I got
Gerard?
Cynthia from Massachusetts. Go ahead.
Oh,
he sounds good to me.
Hi, Gerard. Hi, everybody. I am just recently reconnecting with NLA. I've been, like, really busy, like, dealing with all this stuff, and my heart is just really crying out for that last caller. But there's a pattern of that kind of activities directed towards people and families. I've been hearing a lot about that. It's happened to me. I just thank God I'm clinging to God and growing in strength in Him. But this is actually meets the criteria for torture and human trafficking. You know, it's related to a computer program, and her name is all in the computer. And these attorneys are getting power of attorney status, and they're trafficking her basically and her family. You know, and it's actually evil because they're, like, trying to destroy children at the same time. But I just wanted to convey that. I, at some point, would like to talk to somebody, like, kind of privately, because I'm trying to just get myself out of all of these jurisdictions, because it's not a land jurisdiction. It's all admiralty, military tribunals that we're going through, and they don't tell you that. That's why there's no due process, you know, or they pretend that there is. And so that needs to be, like, exposed. And, you know, I've been through so many judges, police, state, federal levels and everything. It's a systemic issue. It's like people, it's related to that crazy imaginary debt this country has, or the U.S., you know, has, and they're picking people and trafficking and getting revenues. That's all this stuff is. I mean, people who are going to that kind of level from all these courts and all these systems, I have the proof. I'm putting all the proof together to show that. I don't know. Uh-huh.
I'll bet you that some of them are even connected to those companies that fall under President Trump's executive order.
Which one?
The one that he put in that were in the state of emergency with the human trafficking and this and that, and any companies that have helped this or are connected to it, because we're finding out that whole Clinton Foundation thing runs deep in the country, deep into many different areas. I'll bet you that if you go back through and look at the names of the corporations and stuff, I'll bet you could tie it back where it's actually under that executive order that he signed, because that thing was so deep.
The President Trump one that recently about human trafficking? Oh, yes. I'm wondering how we can connect with that.
Well, I'm telling you, find out the name of whatever the corporation is that they're working under, and I'll bet you you could. He named seven different companies, but then there's shell companies inside of that. I mean, there's guys that are doing research, but I'll bet you that if you look at the names of the corporations that are profiting from this, that you could tie this into his executive order. Which would help you, really. I mean, you could, you know, I mean, if it's...
But here's the question, like, who does... This is like, what that woman described, this is psychological operations,
terrible, right?
And they have Nazi doctors, all this It's all like the in Germany when they went around and grabbed people and stole people's assets. It's the same logic.
People need to wake up. They're getting away with it because we're sitting here doing nothing. Remember that thing where the guy says,
right.
You know, they came for this one and I didn't do anything because I wasn't one of them. Then they came for,
right.
He said, then they came for me and nobody was left. That's what's going on here.
I'm just perfectly innocent. I didn't do anything to go through this. Somebody is demonic. I mean, I think it has a lot to do with my faith and you know, the Holy Spirit in me is driving people crazy to put me on that list or something. That's the only explanation I can come up with because nobody's really done anything to deserve this kind of, victimization, but it's human trafficking under labor. That's what it is, I'm convinced. Yeah. And connected together, but I'd like to talk to, I'm actually pursuing the Catholic group too for remedy. So when you were talking about your faith and everything. Yeah. So I'm kind of looking in that angle.
The Catholics have a lot of problems, especially with their administration. It's bad. It's really bad. I am not an apologist for the Catholic Church hierarchy.
Yes, I know this, but you know,
they've been on the skids. Let me tell you why.
Yes, but you know, I trust like God. You know, wherever there's darkness, God puts a great light in there. So I see a battle going on in the whole church, but
it's all going to boil down to one thing, and that's what we got to get back to. The fact of the matter is they're so evil. It's going to be, they'll ask you, do you believe in Christ? And if you say yes, they'll cut your head off. That's what we're getting to. Straighten out. That doesn't matter if you're Catholic or Lutheran or what you are.
What I'm trying to work on though is just getting. I don't even want to be a part. I mean, I'm not lost in the battlefield. I'm not lost in the ocean. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to, correcting, or I shouldn't even say the word correct, but I'm making it known what my status and who I am. And I'm even trying to even get beyond the whole land jurisdiction, wherever it is. I mean, I'm not even sure if Massachusetts is Massachusetts anymore because they keep saying Commonwealth. They describe the state as the Commonwealth. And I was looking at the Bar Association attorneys when they take an oath. They take an oath to the United States and the Commonwealth. I'm like, what is that? I mean, what is the Commonwealth? You know what I mean? I mean, does anybody know? I mean, something's up with that,
all these judges belong to a judicial association, which is really a foreign corporation under the UN, which nullifies. They're not allowed to make, rub elbows with a foreign corporation like that, but they're doing it. They're taking orders from them. They're taking, they're telling them what to do. And that's how they're controlling. That's how they control them.
Right. And if there are ethical judges or ethical, any of these people in these entities, they're not allowed to. I've been seeing judges, attorneys doing bad things and they get promoted. So it's like an opposite thing
going
on.
Well, a good judge gets killed.
I know. So everybody's in a tight spot. I kind of generally look at it that way. People indoctrinated. And I used to work in the mental health field and I got all these fake reports. So I can kind of relate to what that woman was saying, doctors.
There's a lot of quote unquote suicides going on right now. My goodness, they're just running amok because the ship is sinking. And so look, your relief is at hand. Just keep your faith because that's the main thing. And we know they're going to lose in the end. ultimately, and it's getting very close now. So we need brave people like yourself to keep plugging away and keep chipping away at this thing, because
all credit I give to Jesus Christ, because I would not been able to survive. You know, I would never hurt myself, or I wouldn't have been able to do this if it wasn't for my faith in the power of Jesus Christ, and He's only making me stronger. I mean, I lost all my assets, but
He puts His hand over you and He protects you. Otherwise, you wouldn't get anywhere.
Right. Right.
What we don't see is we don't see the death of a thousand cuts that they are suffering. Look, you're not going to see it on the news. What do you think the news is going to tell you, that they're getting ready to roll? You know, they're going to lie to the bloody end. You know, it doesn't matter. They don't care.
See, we really have to look at this as an American problem, not like a racial, like this. You know, it's a really
It is an American problem. Look at this.
It's an American problem.
Look at this whole race thing in America. It's only a race thing when they can whip it up in their favor to make it like that.
It's a division issue, right?
Look at it. We got, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I don't see a racial problem, at least not around me. We've had a black president. I know people, even if I have people in my own family that are married to black people. Why? They're mixing.
Right.
They're melting. You know, and so now you got the Muslim thing. So that's another thing. Look, it's always division to get a. They need strife. They need war.
Right.
They need fear.
That's what it is.
Certain things to control us. It's all about control, and most of it is mind control. You're absolutely right. That's why you have to meditate. That's why you have to make quiet.
Right.
You have to say your prayer. You have to enter within yourself in order to fortify yourself. You say, put on the whole armor of God. That's what it's about.
Yes.
And then you could be courageous once you know that you're okay with Him and you're doing the right thing. You can go in and you can fight and keep your chin up even if your neck is dirty. How about that?
Yes. But hopefully I can talk to either you or I had his number. John, it's, you know, because I'm kind of working on, like, it's theoretical, but I am taking some really active steps, and it's more of like a jurisdictional issue that I'm trying to establish. That's biblically, you know, biblically sound.
Right.
You know, a different way of looking at the rapture, put it that way.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Well, I don't know. You could try to get a hold of John and Jan. Jan may be able to set up a conversation. It's kind of hard sometimes.
Okay, I think I have Jan's number, so I'll
see if we can't get him on there for a couple of minutes with you, you know, just I know you got to want to say something you don't want to say on the air, and that's probably smart.
Right,
too, so.
Right. So anyway, I just enjoy. I had to spin off, you know, because I was in the battle from all different sides, and I couldn't really, you know, keep up with NLA, my PayPal, and you know, my accounts are hacked.
Look at we all fall off. Even I have family problems that makes me disconnect sometimes.
Right.
It's not fun, and people want to get a hold of you, but you know, when you have problems at home that you need to take care of.
Well, you're getting attacked, right? You're getting attacked, and you have to, you know, deal with it. You know, and this is like, you know, they mess with my son. You know, they're messing with our children. You know, and we got to stop looking at, well, I mean, we have to take care of our family. But this is going to affect everybody else eventually, even though other people can't see it yet, you know. But if this continues unabated, you know, if we can't turn it around, it's going to affect more and more people, you know.
Yeah, it's bad. It's epidemic. And look, there are certain places that are worse. That story that came out of Philadelphia tonight, that's horrible. I don't even want to go next to Philadelphia after hearing that. They obviously
have a
horrible problem over there. You know, there's certain states
that
are really, really steeped
really
in this because, you know, and I think there are truly demonic forces at work there, you know. I mean, and I don't know, maybe this whole country, certainly they need an exorcism or something, because the stuff that I hear is so evil, I can't imagine any human being thinking up that stuff on their own and doing it to their own kind. It's, you know.
Oh, I know.
Like Felicia
yeah.
says, I'll take grass and put pepper on it before I eat a human being. But, you know.
Well, you know what it says? Yeah, well, it says in the Bible, you know, Jesus said that, you know, Satan was kicked out of kicked out by lightning. I think that's what's going on. He's closer. He's here, you know, creating havoc.
They say the end times are going to be like the beginning times, which means that he's going to be running around looking for souls to devour. And these evil people, they're making money. They've sold their souls. They don't care. They have no conscience, and they're just living for today. You know, I mean, they're telling our children, even in the commercials, you know, turn the television off, for goodness sakes. You know, it's live for today. Nike, just do it.
Right.
Just do it. Don't think about it. Just
right.
do it. You know,
mm-hmm.
and you wonder why the kids are the way they are, because they're attacking them 24/7 in so many different ways we don't even realize. You know, everybody's got their noses in their phones today, and they're not looking at anything. It's tough. If we survive this, it's going to be a miracle. It really is. It's going to.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that we're even here and we're able to talk like this tonight in this show, this is a miracle, because I believe if Hillary got in, this would have been done. The internet would have
shut down.
We would have been done. So, look, we got to take this reprieve. This is just a reprieve for us, by the way. I think that if we don't use what's been given to us to the proper level, then we will be punished. You know what I mean? It's our own fault then. So we're able to talk. We're able to communicate.
Yeah.
We're able to use these things for what we're using them for, and we better well do it, because that's what he says. If those people who call themselves by my name turn their face to me and repent, I will heal their land. That's what I'm hoping for. That enough of us, and it doesn't mean everybody. There's a certain critical mass, you know, and it may only be 3%, but we need the 3%. So anyway, we got to go now. It's midnight.
Well,
it's
thank you.
Hour.
Thank you so much. God bless you all.
Yeah. Nice talking to you. Thank you, everybody. I'm sorry about the people we didn't get to, but we'll try to get to you next week. So Godspeed, and we'll see you here next week.